Good morning. All right, I'm going to call this meeting to order. My name is David Nahai, and I'm the chair of the Los Angeles Regional Water Board. Today is Thursday, June 25th, and the time is exactly 2 minutes past nine. And I'd like to call this meeting to order. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available. There is a direct link to the webcast on the meeting agenda posted on our website. In addition, we're receiving presentations and public comments through a Zoom meeting platform and in person. For this board meeting, Spanish interpretation services will not be available. Please note that for all Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board meetings, there is no expectation of privacy regarding any communications. Meetings are recorded, and names of participants are listed in the Zoom forum. Participation in a recorded meeting will be deemed consent to be recorded. So let's start with the roll call. Ms. Rowe, will you conduct the roll call, please?
Vice Chair Ash Young.
Present. Good morning.
Board Member Camacho.
Here.
Board Member Christensen.
Here.
Board Member Mendez.
Here.
Chair Nahai.
Yes.
Roll call completed. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll move on to the order of the agenda. Please note that agenda items are numbered for identification purposes only and may not necessarily be considered in this order. I'll ask our executive officer, Susana Arredondo, if there are any changes to the order of the agenda.
Hi, Chair. Yes, there are changes to the order of the agenda. I ask that the update from State Water Board be heard after the approval of the draft minutes. So we'll listen to State Board and then right shortly after approving minutes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right. Let's go on then. Next item will be item number three, which is our approval of the draft meeting minutes for May 28th of 2026. May I have a motion for the approval of the minutes?
So moved.
Thank you. A motion from Vice Chair Ashton and a second from Board Member Christensen. Thank you. Let's have the roll call.
Vice Chair Ashton.
Yes.
Board Member Camacho.
Abstain.
Board Member Christensen.
Yes.
Board Member Mendez.
Yes.
Board Chair Nahai.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Moving on to item number six, which is a presentation from our water board, State Water Board Chair, Joaquin Esquivel. Such a pleasure to have you join us this morning, Chair Esquivel.
Thank you, Chair Nahai. Really appreciate the opportunity to join you. Good morning, board members. Thank you for moving around the agenda here and accommodating my time. Really appreciate it. I think the first bit of update, as I think many of you know, Board Member Firestone has transitioned off the State Water Board. We're so fortunate for her 7+ years of service at the board. It's been certainly a consequential time at the board, a lot of big work decisions, especially around drinking water. And so very fortunate for her service and looking forward to what she does here next and continuing to support her. So until then, I'll go ahead and take on her liaison until we have a replacement for her seat. I'll go ahead and take on the liaison reports here, so you'll be seeing me. So good to be able to join you this morning. It is a very busy time. There's a lot here on our liaison report, but I'll just try to quickly comb through and just give an update on some of the key issues before the State Board. First, I want to thank you all and a number of you and the rest of the Regional Water Quality Control Boards for gathering in May at our Water Quality Coordinating Committee meeting. It was a robust discussion, always a great opportunity when all of us Water Boards members are able to get together, cover issues like emerging issues, certainly like data centers, and then ongoing work, especially around water quality, irrigated lands and other efforts in the state. So just much appreciation to you all for those that were able to attend. This past May as well, the State Board heard an update on our racial equity action plan. The board adopted a resolution back in 2021 and have been working on yearly plans that implement ultimately the goals of the resolution. So heard updates from our water rights office, our water quality folks, the drinking water division. Was a good update, and glad of and proud of the work that we continue to do to ensure equity in the water space. Additionally, the board continues to work on two really critical water rights decisions. The board released actually a draft decision for the Sites Reservoir project here in May, and I believe now have closed the public comment period. We'll be processing those comments. Additionally, the Administrative Hearings Office, who covers that sites project, is also continuing to do work, obviously, on the Delta Conveyance project. Additionally, we heard recently at our board meeting an update or a final report from the Agricultural Expert Panel. This is the second Ag Expert Panel that the State Board brought together, and here received recommendations on how to improve irrigated agriculture and the irrigated lands regulatory program with the regions. I want to note and thank the folks here from the LA region that we heard from, especially a lot of the nurseries, and consideration for what we know is a lot of variety out in the regions for the way agriculture operates and the different operations in the region. So it was a good opportunity to hear from the chair of that Ag Expert Panel. Now the ball is in the State Water Board's court. We'll be convening the regional board soon to have a follow-on discussion as to those recommendations and start to get an idea of how best the State Board should proceed in updating and improving that program. So look forward to an engagement with the regional boards on that, and really a critical program, especially in a warming climate. We know excess nutrients contribute to harmful algal blooms, hypoxia in the ocean, you know, real challenges that we know I'm proud that the state is at the leading edge on, and know we have a lot of work to do. Additionally, we had an update on our water conservation regulations. The board in 2024, in July of 2024, adopted making conservation as a California way of life regulations. This applies to the 400 or so largest urban water agencies and went into effect January of 2025. The years here ahead, you know, some of those standards will begin to tighten. And importantly, there are agencies out there that are going to need assistance. And so we heard about efforts in order to provide technical assistance to a number of the water agencies out there that may be needing it. But importantly, a good opportunity, especially with all the pressures on the Colorado River, the pressures on obviously supplies even from the Bay Delta, that we continue to ensure that we are as efficient as we can with our water resources. So I'm glad to have heard an update there. I think, you know, kind of scrolling through some, you know, more minor efforts here at the board, I think the last item I wanted to make sure an update on is that on the Mono public workshops that we've been holding. Here in early June, we held the first of two public workshops on Mono and the Mono Basin. Certainly, I know outside of the LA Regional Board's purview, but really critical, obviously, to the LA region. That first workshop focused on water quality, salinity, brine shrimp, and alkali flies. And now the second workshop, which will be held this Thursday, today, and it's actually ongoing right now, is on California gulls and other migratory birds. So after those workshops, we'll be taking back that information, and folks should be hearing further as to what the State Board plans to do as we have a critical discussion about that resource. I'll end it there. I'll just really want to express a lot of appreciation to you, Chair Nahai, the board members here. And if there's any questions or anything I can help answer, by all means. And just thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for your many years of service, for your leadership on the State Water Board. It really is a privilege to have you here with us today. We're hoping that Board Member Firestone will be able to join us, if only for a brief time at our next meeting, because we'd like to thank her properly for her very professional job as our liaison. She really was a fantastic liaison for us. So thank you. I'll see if there any of the board members have any questions. Board Member Mendez.
Yes, good morning, and thank you, Chair, for joining us today. We really appreciate your insights, and we also thank former Board Member Firestone for her many of years of consultation and advisement. So thank you. We look forward to working with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks very much for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you as well, Chair Nahai. See you soon. Thank you all.
That's right. See you next time. Bye-bye. All right. We're going to move on to the next item on our agenda, which are board member communications. We're going to start with ex-party disclosures. I'll start with Board Member Christensen.
None for me.
Board Member Camacho.
None.
Board Member Mendez.
None.
And Board Member Ashtian.
None. Thank you.
Thank you. And I have none to report. So we'll move on to board member reports, and board members may discuss communications, correspondence, or other items of general interest. Let's start with Board Member Mendez.
Good morning, everyone. Want to reiterate my comments and about sort of the environmental disasters that are happening in our Los Angeles region. Last month, we reported, along with the executive director, of the great work the staff is doing with multiple agencies, of the oil spill that happened in Boyle Heights and East LA, the unincorporated part of East Los Angeles, and what at the time was hundreds of gallons of oil spills. Now there's new reports that it's tens of thousands possibly of oil spills that went into the streets and into the waterways, including the Los Angeles River. And less than a month later, we have the current Lineage Fire warehouse, which is also having detrimental environmental health impacts to residents, not just in Boyle Heights, but regionally. As we know, smoke transports in a wide area, particularly into the baselands and valley. So quite concerned about that, but encouraged that our staff is continue to work with the lead agencies on these issues. Thank you.
Well, Member Ashton, Vice Chair.
No report today, but thank you. Great to see everyone.
Thank you. Board Member Christian, report from you?
Yes, actually. I got the opportunity earlier this month to attend Recharge LA, which is was a symposium on water and climate resilience for the region. And I was heartened to see a very large focus on nature-based solutions and a big push from several organizations in the room to depave LA. You know, these are incredible feats to try to accomplish, but it seems like people have built a movement and the knowledge and public awareness to actually bring nature back and make that successful. And part of that is, that is a part of the puzzle pieces for water independence and water security in this region. So just wanted to share that. And one of the panels during this symposium was about drought-tolerant landscaping. And interestingly, also kind of intersecting that with fire-safe or fire-resistant landscaping. And so just wanted to throw it out there to any property owners out here. There are good programs that will, or rebates that will help you pay or reimburse you for drought-tolerant landscaping, as well as fire-resistant landscaping. So, you know, a quick Google search will probably pull those up, but it's, again, a good moment in time to start thinking about how you're protecting your property in both those ways. That's it.
Thank you. Board Member Camacho.
Yes, I don't have a report today, but I just want to thank Susana Arredondo, our executive officer, and all the staff that continually keep us apprised of all of these incidents that are going on. And so it is very helpful for us, and at least for me, to know what is going on and know up to the minute what is happening and how we're responding as an organization to these crises.
Yes, and I'll echo that. Thank you. And I hope that we'll hear more from you in the report that you're about to give us. I have one report. I attended my first regional oversight committee meeting at county offices. And thank you again, Board Member Camacho, for attending those meetings and representing us on the regional oversight committee. For folks who may not know what the regional oversight committee is and does, it's part of the architecture of Measure W, which is the measure that LA County voters voted enacted back in 2018, in which LA County voters actually voted to tax themselves in order to enhance stormwater capture projects in the county. And so there are these watershed area steering committees that actually approve funding for various projects, but then those projects that are called Stormwater Investment Plans, or SIPs, come to the Regional Oversight Committee for approval, and then they're then submitted to the Board of Supervisors for final approval. So this is the work of the Regional Oversight Committee. Our board has a seat on that committee, but it is not a voting seat. So we're able to express our views. We're hopefully able to perhaps influence some of the decisions, but we cannot formally vote. So that was my first meeting. Assistant Executive Officer Jenny Newman was there, and Celine Guyon, also from our office, was there. It was a very informative meeting. We dealt with four SIPs that were approved. There are a number more that are going to be going to be coming up for approval at the next Regional Oversight Committee. So as I attend these meetings, I'll provide a brief review, a report of what's happened in them. So that's that for me. We'll now move on to our next item, which is our executive officer's report.
Thank you, Chair. Excuse me. I do have a few updates. The first update is on the former Athens Tank Farm, Ujima Village site. The Los Angeles Water Board, together with the Department of Toxic Substance Control, DTSC, will be hosting an open house this evening. The purpose is to provide an update and answer questions regarding the ongoing environmental cleanup activities at the former Athens Tank Farm, Ujima Village site. The open house will run from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. tonight. It'll be held at the Enterprise Park Gymnasium, located at 13055 Clovis Avenue in Los Angeles. Today, this entire 122-acre footprint has been fully transformed and now named the Irvin Magic Johnson Regional Park. For clarity, this incorporates both the former Ujima Housing Corporation properties and the former Ujima Village apartments into the park's boundaries. First, the Los Angeles Water Board is acting as a lead regulatory agency. We are overseeing all the site cleanup activities and enforcement. Second, DT is taking the lead on all community outreach efforts while also supporting the technical review of human health risk assessments. And finally, ExxonMobil Environmental Solutions Company is a party responsible for conducting and funding the environmental remediation work. We'll continue to monitor their progress and closely and to ensure the safety and well-being of the community. My next update is on the Lineage Logistics Storage Facility fire. On Wednesday, June 17th of 2026, a fire erupted at a 500,000 square foot cold storage facility located at 1400 South Los Palos Street in Boyle Heights in the city of Los Angeles. On Saturday, June 20th of 2026, Governor Newsom declared a state of emergency to further support the response and recovery efforts and to secure additional resources. In addition, the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services, also known as CalOES, has been activated and the State Water Board's Emergency Management Program is engaged. The Lineage Logistic Cold Storage Facility is covered by a statewide industrial general permit since 2020. Based on our records prior to the fire, the facility is in compliance with the permit. The permit requires a facility to prevent stormwater from coming into contact with industrial materials and activities. Runoff from firefighting activities is not covered by the statewide industrial general permit. The firefighting water from the fire is entering the storm drain system owned and operated by the City and County of Los Angeles and ultimately flowing into the Los Angeles River. Water has been flowing into the river for about a week. Under the regional MS4 permit, emergency firefighting activities are exempt from the prohibition of non-stormwater discharges through the MS4 to receiving waters. The MS4 permittees are still working to prevent pollution of water and respond to the firefighting water discharges. Staff has reached out to the city and county to ensure they are taking protective measures to reduce water quality impacts into the Los Angeles River. The city has responded that it's coordinating with the fire department to gain access near the site and implement water protection measures, such as removing debris from the water flowing towards the storm drain. The city plans to divert the water to the sewer for treatment once it's allowed sufficient access. The county reports that it's installing booms where the storm drain enters the river and across the river at Imperial Highway and Willow Street. A full report of the incident will be submitted to the LA Water Board upon the cessation of this emergency, and we'll continue to monitor and update the board as more information becomes available. So I'll stop here if there's any questions, and then I'm going to move into staff recognition.
I have one question. So, well, thank you for being in touch with the city and the county to make sure that everything is being done to protect the Los Angeles River in this situation. But are they, and I know that gaining access seems to be very, very difficult for the firefighters and for others, but have they said when they think they might gain access, when they might start to implement protective measures?
We don't know yet. We do not know yet.
Okay.
Yeah. But okay. I will keep you posted.
All right. Well, thank you for updating. Any questions? Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if there is any type of monitoring that's going on at the LA River right now due to this incident.
Board Member Camacho, we've heard from the county that monitoring is being conducted specifically in the estuary, and we can follow up to find other locations, but we'll get you a report on the exact monitoring.
Is that going to be posted on the website anywhere?
We can do that, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that report and for being so proactive and keeping us updated and speaking to the other agencies involved. I know this is not our domain, but just wondering, are you aware of any air quality mitigations that are currently being rolled out?
Not besides the filters that they're providing to homeowners.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for the report and keeping on top of the issues. And I was just wondering if the various regional boards where there has been industrial or warehouse fires, we currently have, or we just had a warehouse fire in Tracy up in Northern California, and obviously we had the Garden Grove. So maybe it'd be an important time for the regional board members to talk about, like, what do they call it, a post-action plan? I can't remember the exact name. After action report, and to kind of see what are the lessons learned from these industrial fires and impacts, particularly obviously we're using water and other types of fire suppressant chemicals to douse or contain the flames. So I think that would be a proactive measure between the different regions to kind of study that and make recommendations for hopefully there won't be another fire, but invariably there possibly could be another warehouse fire of this magnitude. And lastly, do we have any reports from, I guess this will come up in public comment, if any of the environmental NGOs are doing their own monitoring and if they have shared any of that data with you?
Not at this moment. They haven't shared any data with
us. Okay, so if they're here today during public comment, I hope they can speak to that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I would like to move on to staff recognition. They will be awarded with a Sustained Superior Accomplishment Award from the Water Boards. And this award is to staff who have consistently demonstrated exceptional performance, dedication, and commitment over an extended period of time. This recognition reflects not only the quality of their work, but also the positive impact that they've had on their colleagues, our organization, and the communities that we serve. So I'm going to turn it over to two of our supervisors, but first we'll hear from Supervisor of Site Cleanup Unit 4, Dr. Angelica Castañeda, to present her award. And then afterwards, I'll ask the board to come down to take a picture. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, Vice Chair, and members of the board. My name is Angelica Castañeda, and I am a supervisor in the Site Cleanup Program. It is my privilege to present the Sustained Superior Service Award to Devin DiNapoli for her work in the Sky Park commercial property site in Torrance, California, one of our region's most complex and challenging cleanup cases. As background, the Los Angeles Water Board issued a cleanup and abatement order in June 2021 to the dischargers to investigate clean up the waste from the Sky Park commercial property site. Due to the dischargers being recalcitrant and unwilling to work collaboratively to comply with the requirements of the order, the site was referred to the Attorney General's office in April 2023 to assist with enforcement on compliance with the order. Devin DiNapoli began managing the site in 2024 and became an invaluable project manager for the case, quickly coming up to speed with all the challenges presented by the case and making measurable progress to move the site towards cleanup. Working closely with the Attorney General's Office, Board Counsel, and the Board Litigation Subcommittee, Devin DiNapoli led the technical development of the first interim settlement agreement with HighShear Corporation. This two-year agreement, effective January 7, 2026, lays out clear investigation and cleanup tasks, firm deadlines, and stipulated penalties that will make enforcement more efficient and accelerate progress for the cleanup of the site that the board has sought for more than 5 years. This effort required initiative, collaboration, and exceptional problem solving, combining legal, regulatory, and technical perspectives to produce a milestone for our cleanup program. For these outstanding contributions, we are honored to recognize Devin DiNapoli with a Sustained Superior Service Award. Thank you.
And now I'm going to turn it over to our supervisor of UST and San Gabriel Unit, Ann Lynn. Thank you, Ann.
Okay. Good morning, Chair, Vice Chair, members. I'm delighted to introduce, my name is Ann Ling. I'm the supervisor of San Gabriel River Unit in the Underground Storage Tank Program. I'm delighted to introduce Mattel Desai with a few highlights of her extraordinary performance. Mattel is a water resource control engineer at the Los Angeles Water Board Underground Storage Tank Program. She oversees assessments and a cleanup of leaking underground storage tank cases. Mattel completes her work professionally, timely, consistently, goes above and beyond that which is expected. Here's a few highlights. Mattel invested her time and effort to improve customer relations and demonstrate quality of the service of this agency. The responsible parties of her cases have complimented her often for leading the projects with clear vision, technical knowledge, taking charge attitude, precise and clear communication, thinking in the best interest of project, and the willing help at every step. With her extraordinarily technical, interpersonal, and strong communication skill, Cooper with excellent time management skills, hardworking, and approachable nature, she successfully resolved and continues rebuilding trust for multiple complex situations in expedited manner. Over about 2.5 years, she closed 9 stall cases, showing her efficiency and motivation. In particular, Mattel put an unequal effort to find the practical solutions to move permitting process forward and keeping cleanup from stalling. Mattel is a great team player. She mentored and inspired her colleagues. I received many, many appreciation feedbacks that she always very helpful, helping other staff with field inspections, with sharing industrial standard approaches and methods, peer reviews, and discuss project issues and questions intelligently during meetings, providing in-depth supports and suggested solutions for colleagues. Mattel always took additional challenges and took assignments whenever needed. She's not hesitated taking leader roles. She's participating in multiple working groups in the organization with her technical expertise. A recent example that is that City of Santa Fe Spring reached out to us for technical reviews and support on tanks that abandonment activity for a cluster of 17 USTs. Mattel not only complete work, but also took extra steps to help out the city with meetings for the contractors. She made great impression at the in the way she explained simple method to Coupa staff and their contractors. In results, the city staff invited Mattel to present soil sampling strategy for tank proposed closing in place for the technical advisory group at both Southern California and the Northern California UST tank meetings, which Mattel made a successful presentation for local Coupa participants, helped to clarify appropriate soil sampling and UST abandoning in place cases. Overall, Mattel's extraordinary performance and her dedicating truly make a difference and to the current state of practice. It's my honor to introduce her to you.
Thank you, board members, and that concludes my verbal report. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. So moving on, our next item is our public forum. So any person may address the board regarding any matter within the board's jurisdiction, provided the matter does not appear elsewhere on this agenda, has not been scheduled to appear on a future agenda, and is not expected to be imminently scheduled for the board's consideration. So each speaker will have 3 minutes to address the board unless additional time has been approved in advance. Please note that all comments during public forum should be on items that are not pending or scheduled to appear on a future agenda and which are not otherwise on today's agenda. So as I said, we ask that speakers keep their remarks to 3 minutes unless additional time has been agreed in advance. So I'm going to start by calling on speakers who are here in person. Then we will move on to our virtual speakers who have registered in advance. And I will, and at that point, I will also ask any other speakers who may wish to speak to raise their Zoom hand to join us virtually. So the in-person speakers are first Constance Villalavezo from the Arroyo Seco Neighborhood Council for 3 minutes, please.
Yes, I'm Constance Villavaso. I'm a member of the Arroyo Seco Neighborhood Council. My area of representation is directly adjacent to San Pascual, where a water diversion has been proposed by the cities of Pasadena and South Pasadena. We are part of CD14, one of the most dense and diverse districts in the country. I have spoken before the Regional Oversight Committee, and our concerns that this project overwhelmingly affects people of color and residents of historically redlined neighborhoods, which, as you may know, has left them with a legacy of environmental injustice and is being pushed forward by Pasadena and South Pasadena, both former sundown towns. I have also previously spoken on how this is going forward against the wishes of Keech Nation, the First Peoples of Los Angeles County, and as this is a sacred site to them, this constitutes an act of cultural genocide. However, I made these comments prior to both the disastrous oil spill in East Los Angeles and the lineage fire in Boyle Heights that have heavily affected the Los Angeles River. Given these events, which adversely affects our environment in areas closest to some of the lowest income and most vulnerable residents, it's even more imperative the Water Board support nature-based solutions along the Arroyo Seco in an effort to restore it as we increasingly face climate change and environmental disasters. Thank you.
Thank you. No problem. Hi, I'm Clara Solis with Save San Pascual Park. We'd like to ask you for two things. Submit a comment letter for the draft EIR for the Arroyo Seco Water Reuse Project and require this project to use updated data and guidelines for their project. As Constance said, the Gabrielino Band of Mission Indians, Keech Nation, have asked for full avoidance of the site. And Los Angeles Councilmember Jurado has presented a resolution opposing the project and forbidding use of San Pascual Parkland for the project. Our communities have signed over 4,000 letters and petitions opposing the project. It will take a half acre of San Pascual Park for project infrastructure and allow South Pasadena the use of our land and capture of dry weather flows from the Arroyo Seco in perpetuity. We are concerned these plans include other projects from Pasadena and South Pasadena that will have cumulative impacts and will reduce downstream water in the Arroyo Seco and Los Angeles River. These cumulative impacts have not been adequately addressed in the DEIR, even though requests for more study were made by residents in the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Furthermore, we are concerned that the project represents the possibility of contaminating the groundwater with inadequate study of the issue. We are also concerned that there is risk of damaging the Arroyo Seco channel. I am leaving you with a copy of Engineer King Cool's letter, expert letter. and I sent it electronically too. The data they have used to justify this project is from 14 years ago, and they are not prioritizing sites according to your most recent guidance from your 2024 adaptation plan revisions. Additionally, their claim, missed one point. One of their priorities is outfall AS-41, which in your recent guidance is shown as low priority for dry weather flows, which is what this project will primarily capture. Additionally, their claim to be reducing potable water demand is inaccurate, as they are already using Arroyo Seco water for irrigation at their golf course. The amount of water they are taking from the Arroyo Seco is not being documented, and they have refused the Public Records Act request to quantify the amounts being taken. Also concerning is the project primarily will be capturing dry weather flows with no clear indication of what the limit of the taking will be. We believe there are better ways to clean the water, including nature-based alternatives with cleanup at the source. It isn't fair that our Los Angeles community is being made to bear the burden of this project with project infrastructure and loss of parkland when some of the worst contamination is coming from the Rose Bowl parking lot and South Pasadena Golf Course. I sent you an email with this information. Also, you mentioned about contamination. If anyone is doing any testing, I belong to East Yards, and they say they are doing some testing right now, and they have some pictures.
Okay, thank
you. I'll try and send that to you.
Thanks very much. Thank you. Do we have a response from Ms. Solis at this point, or?
I'll just mention that. Thank you. That we are planning to review the EIR and comment as well on it. Okay. I don't know if AEO Newman wants to add more.
I'll just add that our comments will reflect the direction from the board at the November 24th meeting when we heard about this before.
Right, great. Thank you. Thank you for coming and addressing us today.
Can I follow up?
Yeah, please, of course.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of your questions for the EIR, just maybe a little bit more analysis on impacts to tribal nations, and particularly tribal consultation. As many of us are aware of, the court victory of the Kwai Nation versus Clear Lake in 2024, they didn't adequately address tribal consultation issues, and ultimately the city there lost that court case. And I know that the AG recently filed another court case against another city for a lack of tribal consultation. So I just want to make sure that we are adequately addressing the issues of the local Native American communities and nations as well. Thank you.
Will do, Board Member Mendez. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So moving on, our next in-person speaker is Ray Tahir. For 3 minutes.
Next slide, please. Good morning, Board. Non-point source trash TMDL. The administrative challenge filed against the regional board has been stonewalled and made clear that it is unnecessary because the order staff report, one, failed to provide data showing that the trash from a park or other recreation area next to a water body is a significant source of trash. Next, failed to understand that these sites are already subject to trash PMPs under required MS4 permits. Next, failed to attribute that much of the trash discharged to the LA River is from the city of LA because of its large homeless population and its failure to install trash screens in high debris areas of the city. It also failed to take into account efforts that are made by cities and the county to abate trash controls through in-river macro controls. And it failed to mention that the order requires compliance with Code 13241, which only applies to water quality objectives. Staff is obligated to discuss these issues given its numerous salient defects. Mr. Nahai's stubborn persistence to ignore these defects appears to be motivated by deferring to consultants who would benefit from site-by-site monitoring and treatment BMPs. And as mentioned before, in 2021, Mr. Nahai pressed the board into adopting a revision to the 2021 MS-4 permit that he called for permittees to do to monitoring reports. He attempted to justify his PET requirement by claiming it would improve transparency. But as former board member Munoz mentioned, the public doesn't even know that the regional board exists. The only ones that would benefit would be the MS-4 consultants. Monitoring reports aren't cheap. Further, there's no question that the 2021 permit was actually not actually adopted in 2023, July 23rd, 2021. Also worth noting is that Mr. Nahai is a consultant. Nahai and Associates had made substantial political contributions, apparently to facilitate his appointment to the regional board. His appointment has nothing to do with water quality. And according to Open Secrets, he contributed $2,500 to Gavin Newsom. Next slide. Mr. Nahai revealed himself to be disingenuous when it comes to his concern for water quality and conservation. At the April meeting, he claimed to be a champion of water conservation. Yet while he was general manager for DWP, he was criticized by the LA Times and Daily News for violating the city's water conservation ordinance. I sent in an email to each of one of you board members copies of these news releases. When he returned to the board in 2021, he complained that nothing had been done to improve water quality at Mother's Beach. Yet 5 years later, Mother's Beach has still earned an F grade from NRDC. Clearly, there's a wide gap between his words and deeds. In the future, I'll be discussing Mr. Nahai's overactive involvement in staff members, which I believe has resulted in key staff members leaving the board. I am concerned the staff morale might be at all-time low, and there's no evidence that I've been trained, and there's no succession plan.
Thank you, Mr. Tahir. Your time is up. Your time is up.
Resign from this board.
Okay, all right. Just thank you for your comments. For the record, you are wrong again, as you are in so many times that you come before this board to make baseless statements and that have been refuted again and again, and you still persist. And now, shush, I'm talking now. Quiet. You can be quiet now.
You need to be quiet.
You know? And now you're disrespectful to board members, you're rude to staff, and now you're making personal attacks, right?
The facts are already there, sir.
You know, just...
The facts are here, all right?
No. What you've said here are not facts. They're not facts.
You made a contribution.
There's rubbish. No, of course I've made political contributions, but for you to say that that has anything to do with my position here is just plain wrong and possibly defamatory. You should be careful opening your mouth the way you do. That's enough. We're going to go on now. Okay, we're going to turn now to our virtual speakers. I will start with Mr. Walter Lamb.
Good morning, board members. I do have a video to play.
Sure.
We'll tell you that we've missed a number of deadlines with publication or draft EIR, and I am sure very aware of that, too.
I do remember that some of us were concerned about timing because we felt like some of the elements of the Biona restoration have dragged on for years, if not decades.
Expect a revised environmental impact report addressing the court order components in spring of 2024. Depending on public input received, we were looking forward to recertifying the EIR in 2024 and implementing the initial project sequences in 2025.
Department of Fish and Wildlife hopes to have a draft revised EIR available for public comment by spring of 2025. And depending on public input received on the draft revised EIR, a recertified EIR by the end of 2025. Barring further litigation and depending on available funding, the department hopes to implement initial project sequences in 2026.
I am pleased to announce that I am moving forward with finalizing the EIR And just for some scheduling purposes, I should have the draft recirculated EIR in public review probably May. So it would be May and June for public comments. And then depending on how many comments, the goal would be to try and have that certified in, or sorry, thank you, finalized in September, October. So hopefully this year we would see the recertified EIR finished, which would be just a huge monumental hurdle for us and milestone.
I just have a couple time sensitive pieces of information. As you know, we're working on finalizing the recirculated draft EIR for Biona Wetlands EIR, or Biological Ecologic Restoration Project. We are trying to get that EIR on the streets within the next month. I don't have an exact date yet. There's just things that are beyond my control. But if that is if that hits the streets in the next month, then that'll start a 45-day review period. And I welcome anyone's comments.
Thank you. I just want to stress again, I think we've said this many times, that the refusal of this board to just create something as simple as a long-term schedule that goes all the way to the end of where the TMDLs are implemented, the lack of that schedule is sort of creating the sideways drift of this project. And if the revised EIR was published even today, it would have no impact on the TMDL. So we really need a schedule. Thank you very much.
We will not respond to the presentation in view of the litigation that's pending regarding this matter. But thank you for the presentation. All right, next virtual card I have is from Italia Salvaje, I hope, I hope I'm saying that right, from Bayona Fund Trust.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, board members. I am Italia Salvaje. I have attended past meetings to advocate for a TMDL implementation schedule to address invasive vegetation removal at the Bayona Wetlands Ecological Reserve. My work with the Land Trust is rooted in community engagement and collaboration. I've developed genuine relationships with staff members at the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I am committed to continue building on our team's collaborative efforts to help achieve the invasive vegetation TMDL, working with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and volunteers. The lack of any progress on a regulatory framework is disappointing. Please let the public know what steps this board will take moving forward to ensure timely TMDL implementation. Thank you.
Next card is from Benjamin Harris of LA Waterkeeper.
Hi, good morning, board members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. My name is Benjamin Harris with Los Angeles Waterkeeper. I wish I could be there in person, but wasn't available today. I just wanted to comment. I heard a presentation earlier about the Boyle Heights warehouse fire, and I know we're all tracking that and very concerned about a lot of the general environmental impacts and the community impacts. One thing I just wanted to explicitly flag is I did see a lot of footage of some of the firefighting runoff entering storm drains and entering the Los Angeles River. There was definitely clear signs of debris that seemed to be coming from the fire location that could include building materials. And certainly the water was very dirty and polluted, suggesting that there's a lot of pollutants that are making its way into the water column in the LA River. I know this board took a pretty good look at enforcement over the Dominguez Channel issue that arose back in 2021 that led to significant odors. That was due to a fire from a warehouse that contained a lot of hand sanitizers and other cosmetic materials. So to me, this seems like a similar instance of wanting to look more closely at the enforceability of the MS4 permit and then the other discharge requirements that may have been triggered by this fire. I don't know what the cause of the fire at the site was or anything, but I just wanted to stress that there are seeming to be some significant water quality impacts. So if that's not already on the regional board enforcement team's mind, I would hope that they're able to take a look and see if there's anything that can be done. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Harris.
Chair.
Next.
Go ahead. All right. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Harris, I just have a follow-up question. Did he jump off?
Oh, I'm here.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Harris. Thank you for your comments. Yes, that's definitely on our mind, and staff is quite aware of our interest and this being a priority, as it was with the Dominguez channel. But I had a question regarding monitoring that maybe you or your partners may be doing. I know there was a comment by the East Yards are doing their own monitoring. I was wondering if there's any progress on that you can share with our board.
That's a great question, Board Member Mendez. I don't personally have knowledge about any monitoring that we are doing, but I can certainly check in with our partners to see if others beyond even East Yards are taking a look at that. I would, you know, probably start with Yield to Bay, but I can try to follow up and get back to you about that.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Right. Any other? Okay. Thanks very much. Next, Angelo Gladding, virtually for 3 minutes.
Good morning. I'm here to talk about the Arroyo Seco Water Reuse Project in Pasadena, South Pasadena, Los Angeles area. One of the sites of the Arroyo Seco Water Reuse Project has a thriving old growth riparian forest that predates the New Deal era channelization. The project's plans call for two detention retention ponds that clobber the entire footprint of the existing site, hundreds of tree and shrub removals. The plans show concrete lined bottoms with wetland plants along the banks of the ponds. The engineer's hand wave details of future maintenance with, we'll figure it out as we go, something they simply promise they'll take care of in perpetuity after, presumably, they've figured it out. What is the maintenance plan? Removal of the sediments and accumulated pollutants? And crucially, why can't that maintenance plan, that very same maintenance plan, be implemented with the existing site as it lies today? Sediment removal, additional wetland plantings, cleaned and repaired pipes. If you squint, it's removing a system and replacing it with a more complex version of the one that exists currently. The current system is completely passive and still functioning. It's in need of maintenance. It's 100 years old. The proposed system is chock full of sensor-driven pumps that involve networking between the site and a reservoir a half mile away. If a passive system can't be maintained, how can such a complex system stand the test of time? I mean, we're talking pumps, raising and lowering water levels based upon rain, based upon the reservoir contents down below, all kinds of additional complexity that the current system doesn't need, doesn't have. The infiltration engineering, the impetus for such a large footprint is extremely suspect. Claims of aquifer recharge have already been discounted by the geotechnical documents, despite them being a part of the propaganda of the project. So the infiltration is being claimed as a mechanism for filtration, but I spoke to the engineers yesterday and they couldn't exactly describe how that works. Who validates these filtration and infiltration systems? Lots of unanswered questions, and none of this is documented anywhere in the plans. I think you should look into it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your presentation. Okay, next is Yael Pardes from Save San Pascual Park for 3 minutes. If you want, please go ahead, please. Okay. Maybe Yael Pardes will come back. So let's move on to Barbara Eisenstein from Friends of South Pasadena Nature Park.
Hi. Thank you for having me speak today. My name is Barbara Eisenstein. I founded Friends of South Pasadena Nature Park 20 years ago and have led it ever since. We're a volunteer group that has grown and maintained a four-acre park adjacent to the Arroyo Seco golf course and flood control channel, restoring healthy coastal sage scrub and oak walnut woodland habitat there. I'm concerned about South Pasadena's four planned constructed wetland and stormwater capture projects along the Arroyo Seco. The water reuse project is the first of these four to receive funding, and it's now undergoing CEQA environmental review, which makes this the moment to get it right, since it will set the template for the three that follow. My main concern is that they will significantly decrease downstream flow, particularly dry weather flow, seriously impacting existing aquatic habitat and undermining future ecosystem restoration efforts for the Arroyo Seco and the LA River. I'm also concerned that the water purification approach proposed for these projects relies on data and hydrological modeling that is now roughly a decade old and may no longer reflect current watershed conditions and water management practices. I want to be clear, I support cleaning up bacteria and pollution in the Arroyo, but this project treats a symptom while ignoring the source, upstream contamination from sites, including the golf course itself. And they do this by permanently removing water from an already stressed Arroyo Seco, in part to subsidize turf irrigation. I find it distressing that cities along the Arroyo Seco are using LA County Measure W funds approved by voters in 2018 for stormwater capture and water quality improvement to build heavily engineered gray infrastructure projects instead of supporting the LA County Board of Supervisors 2024 resolution to restart the Arroyo Seco ecosystem restoration effort. These two public mandates are pulling in opposite directions, and that disconnect undermines the effectiveness of both. The public funded both efforts. We deserve a coordinated approach, not one that works against the other. I'm asking the board to require updated data and modeling, a full accounting of downstream flow impacts, and to ensure stormwater capture projects align with rather than undermine the county's ecosystem restoration goals. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Is there a staff response, or would you just note what? Okay. All right, thank you. Thanks for your presentation. I don't have any other cards, but if there is anybody waiting, I don't know, is Ziel Pardes back by any chance?
Oh, they were unmuted.
Hi, I'd like to address the San Pasqual issue as well. Dear board member, I'd like to ask this board to please go back and review the water reuse project at San Pasqual and San Rafael. It poses a great environmental threat to the surrounding community and to the ecology of the area. As we are reviewing the EIR, it is clear to see how many impacts are dismissed as non-significant or rendered as such with mitigations only. There is no amount of mitigation that can repair the tearing apart of this beautiful forest, animals and stream, elimination of shade and air purifying mature trees, and the heat, dust and pollution augmentation to the whole area. As far as water is concerned, it is clear that the goal is to supply free water to a golf course, that in this day and age, like many golf courses around the world, should be using recycled gray water and not deplete an already depleted river of 20 million gallons a year with no real assurance that it should stop at that. It would stop at that. One member of the board committee stressed in a recent meeting that the committee should consider very carefully how much water can be taken from the arroyo by too many parallel projects to such an extent as to render this river dry. There are currently discussions about restoring the arroyo and reviving decades-old plans and research about its natural restoration. This group's effort will be rendered meaningless if the arroyo has no water. Restoring the steelhead trout will be all but impossible. Please request that Pasadena extends the DIR comment period time to 90 days so that everyone has a chance to examine this massive document. It is only right after their failure to communicate the project with the community and pass an inadequate MND. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So are there any other speakers who may wish to speak with us remotely? If so, please raise your Zoom hand. None? Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. So we're going to move on to our next item, which are our uncontested items. So these are items that are expected to be routine and non-controversial. However, any board member has the right to remove an item from the uncontested calendar. So I'll ask first if any board member wishes to do that. Hearing none. Okay, we will then go on with the uncontested items. These are items 8 and 9, and we're going to take them jointly, and we're going to vote on them in one motion. So item 8 is consideration of tentative waste discharge requirements and MPDS permit renewal for Tesoro Operations, LLC, Hathaway Tank Farm, and item number 9, is also consideration of tentative WDRs and MPDES permit renewal for Tesoro Refining and Marketing Company, LLC. This is for the Wilmington facility. So I can ask for a motion and a second to approve these two items.
So moved.
Okay. Motion from Vice Chair Ashtian and a second from Board Member Camacho. Could we please call the roll?
Vice Chair Ashion?
Yes, thank you.
Board Member Camacho?
Yes.
Board Member Christensen?
Yes.
Board Member Mendez?
Yes.
Chair Nahai?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. That concludes that item. Our next item is item number 10, which is going to be an update on regional recycled water projects. We're going to hear from Las Virgenes, Municipal Water District, City of LA, and MWD. So let me first ask if the board members are okay to continue or if anybody would like to take a short break. We're okay? All right, great. So we will go on now with item number 10, and I'll call for the staff introduction from Adam Tang. Thank you. So, Adam, before you start, as I understand it, then we're going to hear first from Las Virgenes, from Oliver Slosser, and then on Pure Water Southern California, we'll hear from Martha Tremblay from the County Sanitation Districts and from John Bednarski, the AGM at MWD, and then we'll hear Pure Water LA from Christina Jones, who's here, and Ben Tanimoto, and I also see that Evelyn Cortez Davis is here. I hope we'll hear from you as well. So thanks very much. Please go ahead.
Not quite, Chair. With your permission, I'd like to rearrange the order. Let MWD
okay.
speak first. And
whatever you say.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right.
Good morning, Chair Nahai, Vice Chair Ashtian, and members of the board. My name is Adam Tang, and I serve as a Senior Water Resource Control Engineer and Recycled Water Program Coordinator at the Watershed Regulatory Section. Today, I'll be introducing item 10, which is an update for the regional recycled water projects. This information item is an update from three of our region's major recycled water projects, which are vital in accomplishing California's water supply strategy goals. When we talk about California's water supply strategy goals, the state's goal is to reuse 800,000 acre feet per year by 2030 and increase that amount to 1.8 million acre feet per year by 2040. Meeting California's ambitious resiliency targets is heavily dependent on what we do right here in our region. By 2040, infrastructure projects in Los Angeles and Ventura counties are projected to reuse over 623,000 acre feet per year, which accounts for roughly 42% of the projected state's volume. Driving this effort are our major potable reuse programs, such as Pure Water Los Angeles, Pure Water Southern California, and Las Virginias Triumphal Pure Water Project. Okay, I apologize for that. Achieving these ambitious milestones require a coordinated regional strategy, which we will outline today. And with this, we invited three major reuse programs to update their progress to achieve their goals, and the representatives from five agencies are present here. As Chair mentioned, representing Pure Water Southern California, John Benarski, Assistant General Manager of the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California, Martha Tremblay, Assistant Chief Engineer and Assistant General Manager at the Los Angeles County Sanitation Districts. Next, we'll hear from representatives of Pure Water Los Angeles, Christina Jones, an environmental engineer in the program management section at Los Angeles Sanitation and Environment, and Ben Tanimoto, a waterworks engineer in program planning section at the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. Lastly, we'll hear from Oliver Slosser, the engineering program manager at Las Virginias Municipal Water District, on the updates and progress of the Pure Water Project.
Thank you, Adam. Good morning, Chair Nahai and members of the board here. On behalf of the Metropolitan Water District and the LA County Sanitation Districts, I want to thank you for having us back to give you an update on our important program, Pure Water Southern California. I think it's been about a year since we've presented in front of this board, and in that last year, I think we have some significant accomplishments that we've achieved on the doorstep now of moving forward with the full-scale program, and then talk about some of the more innovative activities that we'll be undertaking over the next several years to advance some of our initiatives. So just a quick overview of our agenda here. We have been working very diligently on the EIR. Pleased to report that's been completed. We have a very successful demonstration plant down in Carson. I hope most of you have already been down there. We have some great plans for that as we adapt that to our plans to research direct potable reuse. Martha is going to follow me up. We're going to be doing a tag team and talk about some of the pretreatment facilities that they're embarking on at the sanitation districts. And we'll talk about some of the regulatory considerations and then close with me coming back up and talking about public outreach, workforce development, and some of the affordability aspects of this large program. Many of you are aware of the program. We'll be collecting water down at the A.K. Warren facility in Carson, doing additional pretreatment to that water to remove nitrogen, primarily in the form of ammonia from that water, and then sending it through the advanced treatment processes. At the beginning of this program, the initial approach for the program was primarily municipal, industrial, commercial industrial uses of the water, but the main use was going to be indirect potable reuse. Through our EIR, we expanded that use to include direct potable reuse through raw water augmentation at Metropolitan's water treatment plants. We have about a 35 to 40 mile pipeline that will be constructed, also using existing infrastructure to convey that water to its destination points. Just a brief overview of the program itself. As we laid this out in the environmental impact report, we had two phases for this 150 million gallon per day project, 168,000 acre feet per year. Starting down at the Warren facility in Carson, we have a 7-foot diameter pipeline coming out of the Warren facility, moving eastward through Lakewood and Long Beach to get to the San Gabriel corridor, then using that corridor as the way to move north, dropping off water along the way for groundwater replenishment purposes, getting up to the main San Gabriel Basin. This is a main customer envisioned for this program. And then finally, using some existing infrastructure in the first phase to get that water over to both our Weymouth treatment plant in Laverne, and then through some existing infrastructure down to our Deamer plant in Yorba Linda. Future expansion to full capacity of 150 MGD is envisioned also in the EIR. a big program like this takes substantial partnerships, and we're happy to have the sanitation districts as our key partner on implementing this program. But even with producing this water, you need to have folks that are going to take and use this water. And for this program, Metropolitan will be relying on its member agencies, those listed on the second line here. We have seven of those initially have been identified, either for municipal industrial uses or groundwater replenishment purposes. Been working closely with the groundwater basin managers in both the Central and West Coast Basin, as well as the main San Gabriel Basin. And then also working very closely with Colorado River Partners. I think I explained this last year, that with the declining health of the Colorado River Basin, it's imperative that we work closely with those two entities, both Southern Nevada and Central Arizona Project, as a way to not only bring funding in to support our program and make it more affordable, but also to allow Metropolitan to leave water behind on our Colorado River Aqueduct for use in the Colorado River Basin. And then just also have a number of other key partners down at the bottom, including LA County Public Works, Southern California Edison. We're pleased to announce that we have secured agreement from them to use their high voltage transmission right of way along the San Gabriel River for a significant portion of our pipeline alignment that will allow us to keep the construction out of city streets as we go northward from Long Beach up to the Irwindale area. Program updates. We're pleased to report that we have completed our programmatic EIR that was certified unanimously by our board in February. And then most recently in April, our board approved the next phase of the project to support that with $150 million in what we call capital investment funding. It's a combination of funding that we will be supporting from our rates, but also from state grants that we have received and other outside sources to fund the next phase of the engineering and planning process, which will involve securing contractors and engineering design consultants to begin design of both the advanced treatment facilities as well as the conveyance facilities. Also pleased to report that earlier this year we received state certification and received the governor's sign off on the program as being critical infrastructure for the state of California through the SB 149 certification. And what that allowed us to do is to limit the amount of time that we could have legal challenges to our CEQA documentation. We've successfully passed through that. We have not received any objections to certification of our CEQA document, but we're glad to have this SB 149 certification in our back pocket. I mentioned we've completed preliminary design of the first two conveyance pipelines, and we're beginning the preparation of RFQs for the advanced purification facility, the initial pipeline alignments, and also for the modifications to the demonstration plant in Carson to turn that into a DPR testing platform. And with that, I'm going to start transitioning into a larger discussion on the demonstration plant in Carson with our plans to commence assessments of direct potable reuse. The Grace Napolitano Innovation Center, as we call it, has been a great vehicle for getting the word, not only getting the word out about our project, but also for doing some important scientific research down at the facility. We've brought in thousands of tours through the facility, and it's really proved its worth in being able to gain public support for the program. I think through the environmental process and through our community and public outreach programs, I think we've really been able to sell the message that development of more local resources, such as the type of the Pure Water Program, is really the next step in development of water supplies for Southern California. Our plan initially was to do a lot of IPR testing, and we've successfully completed that work over the last 5-6 years, primarily looking at how to remove nitrogen from the water, working closely with the sanitation districts and the MBR process that we're employing at the demonstration plant. But now we want to move into testing direct potable reuse, both for raw water augmentation and for treated water augmentation, which some folks refer to as flange-to-flange direct potable reuse. We want to begin examining the viability of that for our program, and I'll get into some of the details about why that could be important to us. We continue on with our regulatory and expert coordination. We established a science advisory panel about 10 years ago. We've been using those folks continuously throughout the entire process, and we'll continue to engage them as we move into DPR testing. The DPR implementation plan and why this is so important to us, as you can see from this chart here, we have the Warren facility down in the lower left. Our pipeline alignment goes up kind of diagonally through the center of this graphic. And then crossing the graphic are three of our major treated water feeders that Metropolitan has in the Southern California area, starting at the bottom with the second lower feeder, the lower feeder, and the middle feeder. All of these three pipelines will cross the Pure Water Backbone Pipeline. So we think that there are good opportunities, should our testing at the Napolitano Center prove its worth, that we'll be able to potentially inject the treated purified water into our finished water pipelines. A lot of work that needs to be done there. I don't want to, you know, gloss over the importance of the research work that we'll have to do, but there is the potential for that. That type of application was not covered in our programmatic EIR, so once we get closer and know more about what it will take to do that, we'll have to amend our environmental document to cover that. Raw water augmentation at the two treatment plants showing up in the upper right, that was covered in our environmental document. So we're good to go with that, but we still want to do some more testing down at the Napolitano Center to finalize the treatment for raw water augmentation. We know that there is been promulgated by the state of California a default treatment train for direct potable reuse, and that's shown on the top bar here. We're going to be using that as our baseline treatment process, but also we'll be attempting to develop some alternative treatment processes that may be equally as effective from a treatment standpoint, but perhaps more cost-effective from an overall construction and operational standpoint. So again, just a brief overview of the facilities that you see there. Kind of in the lower left there of the existing demonstration plant will be some of the new facilities that we envision designing and constructing over the next several years to modify that facility to do the DPR testing. Here's kind of the timeline for our DPR testing schedule. We're in design right now. We're going to go through a solicitation process later this year, begin design early next year, go into construction in early 2028, and actually begin the testing in mid-2029. And now I'm going to turn it over to Martha Tremblay, the Assistant General Manager at the LA County Sanitation Districts.
Martha. Thank you. Thank you. Good morning. Thank you for having us and allowing us the opportunity to share the efforts on the sanitation district side. John did a nice summary in terms of Metropolitan's activities, the demo plant for the plant testing for direct potable reuse. On our end, right after Metropolitan Board certified the EIR, our District 2 Board found the final EIR adequate for our purposes, which include the pretreatment aspect, the membrane bioreactor that we'll be using for nitrogen management. In addition, this spring, our joint outfall system districts, about 14 of those districts, went through a rate process, a five-year rate process that was approved and that will provide funding to allow us to start the design of the membrane bioreactor, along with other work that we'll be doing in support of this project. About a budget, we're looking at $250 million over a five-year period. So we're really excited about that. I have a few slides to share with you about our pretreatment facilities and our work there with the membrane bioreactor. That is what we are using to manage and reduce nitrogen. And I'll share a little bit about some of our work in terms of regulatory-wise, making sure that we have a pathway that we can comply with the RO concentrate management, that brine management is very critical for a project of this scale, as well as making sure that this project is considered in the salt and nutrient plans for the groundwater basins that plan to use this water. So to briefly review, this is an aerial of our Warren facility. This facility is our largest facility in Carson, has a design capacity of 400 million gallons per day. We're currently treating about 250 that we clean to the secondary treatment process and discharge through our tunnel and outfall system. This is our largest source of water. We have 10 upstream plants, water reclamation plants, that we're mostly using the flow there. This is critical in terms of having, rather than having this water go to the ocean, it can be beneficially reused and make our region more water resilient. We are excited to be working with Metropolitan. They are the right partner to help make this project a reality. We're fortunate to have the water and the land available for a project of this scale. So briefly, I mentioned that we are taking the lead with the membrane bioreactor. What this is basically a biological treatment process with filtration that allows us to remove nitrogen, and it's upstream of the reverse osmosis process. This is a new technology for us. It'll allow us to provide cleaner water for the downstream for Metropolitan, similar to what we do at our upstream plants. But this is a new process, so we're actually considering an alternate project delivery where we're doing not design, bid, build, but potentially design build or progressive design build, which allows the designer to work with the contractor early on, which is going to be critical since we are making that connection to our existing facilities and to the reverse osmosis process that Metropolitan will be constructing. So it's critical in terms of this type of process can provide more cost certainty and schedule-wise too. In addition, we're currently in design with for a side stream centrate treatment process. What this is basically there's about 5 million gallons of flow that are generated during our solids processing. This 5 million gallon is high in ammonia. If we're able to treat this stream, we're able to reduce our nitrogen loading for the whole plant by 15%. Less flow to treat allows us to save money, less infrastructure needed, less chemicals. We're currently in design, scheduled to be done next year. We did receive some grant funding for planning and design. We are looking to try to leverage as much funding as possible to minimize the impact to our ratepayers. So the plan is design will be done next year, and we're trying to move forward with this in a timely process. The last thing I wanted to share with you in terms of nitrogen management are pretreatment activities to help support pure water is we have retrofitted one of our reactors, our biological reactor, to be able to nitrify and denitrify. Currently, there's no nitrogen transformation at all, but we have excess capacity that we were able to leverage. We did some piping modifications, and it works. And currently, one reactor allows us to reduce 5% of the overall nitrogen loading. We're considering retrofitting another reactor, but we're still evaluating the first one to make sure that we understand the process and it's accomplishing exactly what we needed to accomplish. But basically, it's a great opportunity to use existing infrastructure and minimize costs as much as possible. Reverse osmosis concentrate or brine management for a project of this scale, very, very important. At this point, we're proposing to discharge this stream along with a blend of secondary effluent through our existing tunnel and outfall system. This is similar with what Orange County Sanitation District does in the groundwater recharge project that they have in Orange County. We have looked at other options, and this project would produce 25 million gallons of flow per day. At that scale, deep well injection or evaporation ponds, there's just really no room and space possible. But at this point, we've done studies to determine that there is no impact going through ocean discharge. We've done work at the demo plan. We've worked closely with regional board staff in terms of some of the testing that's being done to make sure that there it will be no impact with our proposal to discharge to the ocean. Looking at dilution too, with this blend of brine or reverse osmosis concentrate and the secondary effluent, actually the dilution factor increases slightly. Now, specifically, we've done testing, I mentioned at the demo plan, over 200 parameters, and there's compliance with all criteria that are currently in place. Toxicity testing also shows no persistent toxicity observed. Microbiology-wise, we won't need to disinfect this concentrate as we blend it with the secondary effluent. Lastly, I wanted to share with you this project is currently not included in the existing salt and nutrient management plans for the groundwater basins that will receive it. As you're aware, these plans are intended to help groundwater basins manage salts, nutrients, while considering the benefits of recycled water projects, but being protective of water quality. We recently entered into an agreement with Water Replenishment District, which is the water master for Central Basin and West Coast Basin. They're embarking along with other stakeholders to complete those updates and work with the regional board. There's studies, modeling work that needs to be done. So we'll make sure pure water is being considered within those basins, as well as working with the main San Gabriel Basin Water Master also on that effort. Their last salt and nutrient plan was last updated in 2016, so we'll be working with them too to make sure this project is reflected, and we look forward to working with the regional board on these efforts. And this was my last slide. I'll turn it back to John so that he can share about our outreach, workforce development, and affordability efforts.
All right, thank you, Martha. Let me talk for just a few minutes, and we're kind of at the end of the presentation, about some of the other collaborative efforts that Metropolitan and the sanitation districts have going on. Program outreach to the surrounding communities and to the populace of the areas that will eventually be served by this program have been hugely important to building consensus that this is the right project at the right time for Southern California. We've been able to present, you know, a series of tours through the demonstration plant, been out there on the web, social media, in the newspaper, providing events and community partnerships, all as a way to develop that strong base of public support for water reuse in Southern California. And I think that through the acceptance of the EIR and our recent board approval of the budget and the approval of that EIR, I think we've really demonstrated the success of that program. But again, that focus was primarily looking at indirect potable reuse, commercial industrial use, and also raw water augmentation as the form of direct potable reuse. As we move into this arena of treated water augmentation, we're going to really have to redouble our efforts with the public. Again, leveraging the knowledge that we learn at the demonstration plant with our enhanced testing there, and bringing that message to the public as we move forward about the advantages of using treated water augmentation as a way to supplement Metropolitan's and the region's imported water supplies. The sanitation districts and Metropolitan also have a great focus on workforce development in the area. This program will create up to 75,000 job years during the construction program for the project, with almost 2,500 ongoing jobs once the program is operational. Both Metropolitan and the sanitation districts have embarked on project labor agreements for all of the work conducted under this program. This will be approximately an $8 to $9 billion effort for the region, so it's really nice for us to have this under the umbrella of a project labor agreement. Both of our organizations are working collaboratively to develop what we call a workforce training center that will be sited at the A.K. Warren facility. And the purpose for this is to allow both Metropolitan and the sanitation districts to train the workforce of the future for operators of both wastewater and water treatment facilities. This is a great undertaking. Again, this facility was covered in the environmental impact report, and we're really excited about getting underway with that. Currently, we have an internship program with Carson High School. This is a way to develop an interest in water through the K-12 outreach program, getting those youngsters interested in both water and wastewater careers, and then just making them knowledgeable about how important it is to have reliable water and wastewater providers in the Southern California region. And then I know there's a lot of questions about affordability, and that's important to all of us. Currently, both Metropolitan and the sanitation districts are funding, I think, a majority of our upcoming work over the next 2 to 5 years through our rates. I can speak for Metropolitan. The $150 million that we expect to spend over the next 2 to 3 years, about two-thirds of that will come from grants and outside contributions, with about one-third of that being supplied by our rate structure. But we know as we get into the heavy spending on design and construction of these facilities that we're going to have to look for additional sources of funding for these programs. We can't just put the funding of these programs on the backs of the ratepayers by continuing to increase our rates to pay for this. So over the next couple of years, I know Metropolitan is going to be looking at a variety of different instruments that we can use to leverage both state and federal funding, potential funding coming in from Southern Nevada and Arizona as part of the program that I talked about earlier, and then also looking at some other innovative funding methods for the program so that we can minimize to the greatest extent possible putting these expenditures directly on our rates. Looking also, like I said, at the climate bond. This is just a listing of some of the outside funds that we've already secured to date. So we're very optimistic that we'll be able to, again, leverage other people's money to bring this important project to Southern California. And I think with that, I'd like to close, and I know that Martha and I are available to answer any questions. So thank you for the time today.
Thank you very much. Let me, so we can wait until the end to ask questions, or we can ask questions as we go along. I don't know if you have time pressures or if you and Martha need to leave or something. So what is everyone's pleasure? We'll do it at the end.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much. Yes, so please stay with us. Okay. All right, so Adam, next. Who are we hearing from next?
Good morning. It is an excellent day to talk about potable reuse. My name is Evelyn Cortez Davis. I am the Director of Strategic Initiatives at the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. And I, on behalf of the City of Los Angeles, would like to thank the board and the board staff for their continued support of potable reuse initiatives in our region. It is the future of water resilience in our city, in California, and really in all of the regions that are connected to us in the communities that we serve. So we do appreciate, one, the time that we're devoting to this discussion today, and also I wanted to highlight the importance of the ongoing partnerships that we have within the city and external to the city in order to make something of this scale possible. Pure Water Los Angeles is a multi-decade, multi-billion dollar initiative, and we'll hear more from our technical experts in just a moment. I just want to highlight the criticality of the partnership within the city family between LADWP and Los Angeles Sanitation and Environment, but also with our regional partners, including Metropolitan Water District, Southern California, and many other regional and local agencies here that are going to continue to offer support for us. So thank you very much. I will yield the floor to Mr. Ben Tanimoto of LADWP and Christina Jones of LASAN.
All right, thank you, Evelyn. Morning, Chair, Vice Chair, members of the board. My name is Ben Tanimoto. I'm one of the Waterworks engineers working on the program from the LADWP side. And Evelyn mentioned it's a good day to talk about potable reuse. It is, every day is a good day to talk about potable reuse. And this is the agenda we'll be covering today. We'll be providing a brief overview. I know it's been about a year, similarly to MWD, since we provided an update to the board. We'll be sharing some of the project updates, some of the pilot projects that have been happening at Hyperion. And we've reached a number of really great milestones on those projects, but also regarding our CEQA, regarding our program funding, and also ongoing outreach as well. We'll be talking about some of the next steps, some of the considerations around the alignments, and determining some of the cost and affordability aspects as well. And this is a slide showing an overview of the program. On the left, you'll see a conceptual map. We are, in this program, taking water from the Hyperion Water Reclamation Facility, advanced treating it, and serving it to different various parts of the city, either through indirect potable or direct potable reuse. And you'll see some of the goals there for the city that we are pursuing under this program. Primarily, this is a water supply and reliability initiative, as well as one that will improve the quality of the discharges to the Santa Monica Bay. And with that, I'll turn it to Christina to first provide some updates about the projects in Hyperion.
Thank you, Ben. Good morning, everybody. My name is Christina Jones, LA Sanitation Environment. Happy to be here to provide some updates on our projects at Hyperion specific to this program. And I'm hoping that this photo might look familiar to a few of you, because I believe your chair was at our ribbon cutting on April 1st. So thank you for coming and representing the board. That was a very exciting day for a lot of us, especially me, because I've been involved with this project for some years now. So anyway, some quick updates on this project. This project will be providing 1.5 million gallons per day for non-potable reuse of recycled water to LAX and Hyperion. Currently, we are producing about half that capacity because LAX is not yet online to receive the recycled water just yet. So we are coming up to speed on a bunch of different elements of this project. We have started operations and had consistent production and also regulatory compliance since January of this year. And in January as well, we also took over with our city staff operations and maintenance of this project. So it's been a very eventful first half of the year for us within sanitation, especially for this project. Keeping in mind that we expect LAWA to come online later this year, hopefully by fall or summer of this year, we are double-checking things, so to speak, making sure that everything is working as effectively and efficiently as possible, and we are making any modifications necessary for the operations and maintenance of the project. And a quick shout-out to staff that helped with the regulatory elements of the first project. We have had a bit of a learning curve with some of the submissions that are required for the quarterly reporting. So I do want to say thank you to Adam and team for your help with coming to terms with all of that. Moving on to the next project, MBR pilot facility. This project is a slightly smaller project than the previous one. This is going to be a 1 million gallon per day facility. This is mainly for research purposes and regulatory acceptance. We are going to be comparing three MBR vendors, and we have completed the odor control facility installation of this for this project, and we are going to be finishing up the facility condition assessment, and we hope that startup and commissioning will be happening in fall of this year as well. And a relatively new project for us is our side stream treatment pilot facility. This facility will be testing two side stream deammonification technologies, and the design is ongoing right now, and we expect it to end in December of this year. And we hope that construction will take place in 2027, with pilot testing starting in 2028. Getting to more specifically the Pure Water Los Angeles program, we are very excited to let you know that Phase 1A, which is, as the name might suggest, the first part of our project at Hyperion for the Pure Water Los Angeles. We are moving forward with this element as much as we can. CEQA is ongoing, and Ben's going to get into that in a minute. But this element is really critical infrastructure, foundational infrastructure, in fact, for Hyperion that we need to include in any scenario that we may move forward with for the Pure Water Los Angeles program. So this element of Phase 1A is very important for us. And we just completed an industry day earlier this month, so June 4th and June 9th. We had about 90 attendees over the course of those 2 days, and attendees were offered a brief overview presentation and some information about the expected project, as well as a tour of the anticipated construction areas at Hyperion. So we got a lot of good feedback from the members of industry that attended, and we look forward to receiving their submissions, because we are going to be releasing our request for qualification in a few months. So there's a lot of good work there as well. One last comment. We are working on grants for Phase 1A especially, and we will get into that in a later slide deck, but I just wanted to highlight that for this Phase 1A, we are anticipating grant inclusion. And with that, back to Ben.
All right. As promised, this is the CEQA schedule that we're showing for the Programmatic Environmental Impact Report. So currently we are in the stage of preparing the EIR itself. Our notice of preparation and scoping period concluded in October of last year. And in that, we conducted a few different public meetings, various forums and formats to solicit some initial feedback on the program and the scope of what will be in the documents. Along the way from this, you'll see the various opportunities for public input that we'll have. The next one likely will be when the draft EIR is released to the public. And we're anticipating right now a final adoption by the board, or joint boards, I should say, of that EIR in around the end of 2027 or start of 2028. So this is still an early process, but we do anticipate, again, multiple rounds of public input and great comments that we'll receive along the way. Now, a little bit about the funding opportunities. Christina touched on just a little bit as well. We are working on some various MOAs that relate to cost sharing between the city departments on this program. The first of those was adopted by both boards in early part of 2026. That's related to funding of some of the conceptual planning documents that were prepared for this program. And you'll also see that we are applying and pursuing actively funding from the Bureau of Reclamation, primarily related to Phase 1A. That was what Christina mentioned, the foundational infrastructure improvements, such as the equalization, intermediate pump station, and other really critical infrastructure that's needed to get this program off the ground. Now, for funding, one thing I will say is that we are, as a city, overall evaluating just the overall size of the program that makes sense. Where should the infrastructure go? And, you know, some of the really important feedback that we've gotten from our environmental NGOs, mayor's office, and various others is that cost and affordability is, of course, at the forefront of everyone's mind. And when we're looking at what we had initially put out there for this program, the conceptual level said we could build up to 230 or 210 million gallons a day of capacity. That could cost the city $20 or $25 billion or more. And so the idea is, if we take a closer look at that, if we really refine and take a look, what really makes sense for the city to build long term, what scenarios are we planning for? What is, you know, what earthquakes or drought scenarios might we encounter? How much resilient supply do we need? And how does this fit into the overall department strategy? That is what we're hoping to take a closer look at. I'm going to talk about what we're calling the feasibility study related to Pure Water Los Angeles. So, of course, cost and affordability, the overall sizing and location of the infrastructure, all of that's going to be wrapped up, hopefully, into that document. Now, related to the stakeholder engagement piece, this is something that is, of course, ongoing continuously. I want to highlight the stakeholder engagement group that we recently convened on June 5th. That was the stakeholder engagement group overall is a group of 100 different stakeholders. I believe the regional board is on that and should be receiving, you know, invites to participate. We always welcome you or your staff to be there. But in these, we host these different small focus group type sessions where we ask various questions about, you know, how urgent is it that we build these supplies? How important is it? What benefits are being provided and what are communities looking for? These are really great forums that we hold continuously. This was the fourth of those. We also engage with community members and these stakeholders on the urban water management plan and various other initiatives that we're pursuing in the water system. Now, to talk further a little bit about the ongoing development that's happening, I mentioned the feasibility study. We see that as a critical initiative that is wrapping up a lot of questions. You know, the master plan and the program implementation plan that we had initially released, again, they're very conceptual. They basically said, here's what you could build and here's where you could put it. But now we want to answer the question of, what are we actually thinking of building and what makes sense for us to build? That is what we see as the outcome of this feasibility study. So primarily what that's wrapping up is what does the city think about the treatment process, the sizing of the infrastructure, and how much capacity to build, and then also what phasing makes sense, what are some intermediate benefits we could provide to the city that will help us build that momentum along the way. And all of this, of course, will be pending any further stakeholder input, CEQA completion, and all of the different touch points that we have along the way scheduled. CEQA is just one component of our outreach strategy, and we really anticipate getting a lot of different input from the various engagements that we have with our communities. Okay, and that concludes the presentation. I wanted to share just some of the resources that we have available on our website, some of the planning documents I mentioned, as well as our CEQA schedule, and you'll also see the NOP, the Notice of Preparation, that was released to our communities as well. And finally, some other presentations and fact sheets that we've given. We also welcome emails if there are further opportunities that we could have to link with your staff or talk about any of these considerations and where the program is at and what's happening with CEQA. We certainly would welcome that. Please just send us an email to this inbox and we'll take a look at it. Okay. With that concludes our presentation. We'll be happy to take questions, at the end after the final one is completed.
Thanks. Stick around. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next.
Good morning, Chair Nahai, members of the board. Great to be with you this morning. My name is Oliver Schlosser. I'm the Engineering Program Manager with Las Virgenes Municipal Water District, representing the Joint Powers Authority with Triumphal Water and Sanitation District as well. It's a joint project. Very happy to be with you to give an update to our Pure Water Project, Las Virgenes Triumphal. We're going to run through, I know we were here last year. We have some updates from what we presented last time, and just want to share with you the progress that we've made, which has been really exciting. So I'll go over why we're doing the Pure Water Project, the project overview, including our advanced water purification facility, the different conveyance pipelines that we'll be building as part of it, and some of the ancillary projects that we're pursuing. Talk a little bit about water augmentation, which is a key component of our project in order to maximize utilization of the facility, as well as funding and financing, our current schedule, and some of the remaining challenges that we're facing. So Pure Water really has three main drivers. First and foremost was our regulatory driver to meet a time schedule order for our Tapia Water Reclamation Facility. That sort of was the catalyst for the project. But also creating a local source of drinking water. As you may or may not know, Las Virgenes is 100% dependent on imported water from Northern California through the State Water Project. We have very limited access to Colorado River water. So this project represents our first local supply of water and may represent up to 30% of our total supply when fully utilized. This project also addresses the seasonal variation in our non-potable recycled water supply and demand, where we create that water pretty much consistently throughout the year, but the demand is very high in the summer, low in the winter, so we have this excess water during the winter that we need to find a beneficial use for. So quickly on the project history, we've been producing Title 22 recycled water since the 70s. This was historically kind of a discharge mechanism for our Tapia Water Reclamation Facility. As I mentioned, that seasonal imbalance of supply and demand meant we had a lot of excess water available to us in the winter and no customers to sell it to. So we looked at ways that we could store this water, looking to build a reservoir to store the non-potable water, which was a project that was pursued for many years. In 2016, the JPA took a step back, initiated a stakeholder engagement process with NGOs, local stakeholders, local cities, regulatory agencies, including the regional board, and really tried to evaluate what the problem was and kind of blue sky thinking. That's where the Pure Water Project was started. I won't go too deep into this, but this just kind of shows the seasonal imbalance that we do see. The orange line is our non-potable demand. And then we have a pretty constant supply of it. So as you can see, there's quite a variation between summer and winter, and that's really why we find ourselves with all this excess water. So the water requirements for Tapia Water Reclamation Facility, in 2017, a time schedule order for new TMDLs for discharge to Malibu Creek was enacted. This amendment addressed the benthic community impairments in Malibu Creek and the Malibu Creek estuary. That creek lets out into Santa Monica Bay. And so we were faced with upgrades to our water reclamation facility or a project like Pure Water where we could invest similar amounts of money and actually create a new source of potable drinking water. So it was kind of a win-win situation where we could address that water quality challenge while also creating a new source of water. And this really goes into the ethos of the Joint Powers Authority, which is bringing our water full circle, making the most use of everything that we're importing, both from an energy perspective and just being good stewards of that resource. So a quick overview of the project. We'll be utilizing California's reservoir water augmentation, surface water source augmentation project. So this is indirect potable reuse. We'd be using our Las Virgenes Reservoir as the environmental buffer, and this would be raw water augmentation to that reservoir where we currently store water from Metropolitan. In order to implement this, it requires a large amount of pipeline infrastructure in order to connect all of our facilities. I'll show you on a future slide, but they're somewhat geographically disparate, and so about 21 miles of pipeline is going to be required in order to achieve this. The AWPF will serve will receive those seasonally variable flow rates from our Tapio water reclamation facility and from the Purple Pipe distribution system that we already maintain. So this is among one of the state's first reservoir water augmentation projects. We are following projects such as San Diego's North City Pure Water Project, and so it's been a very exciting process to implement one of these first projects within California, working closely with the regional board and Division of Drinking Water and other regulatory agencies in order to implement these guidelines that were set forth about 10 years ago. So this will be the first reservoir augmentation and direct potable reuse for Los Angeles County and for the Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board. Pardon me, having a little bit of trouble talking this morning. So quickly to the elements of the overall pure water program. So as I mentioned, Tapio Water Reclamation Facility has about a 12 million gallon per day capacity. The excess water that we're not able to resell through the non-potable Purple Pipe system would then go to the new Advanced Water Purification Facility. That would have about a 7.5 million gallon per day influent capacity and would produce at that 7.5 million gallon per day influent about 6 million gallons per day of purified water. Brine reject from the reverse osmosis process would be sent through a new brine line about 14 miles to Cayugas Municipal Water District's salinity management pipeline. The purified water would be sent to Las Virgenes Reservoir, where it would be blended with Metropolitan Water District water that we purchase. And then that would then be, after a set amount of detention and dilution, treated through Westlake Filtration Plant and ultimately served to our customers. So it's full advanced treatment, use of our existing drinking water reservoir and our existing water treatment plant. This just gives a brief overview of the geographic spread of all these facilities. Tapio Water Reclamation Facility down at the bottom right is in Malibu Canyon. We would be utilizing the Purple Pipe system, which is already to then convey that to Advanced Water Purification Facility in the city of Agoura Hills. Purified water then sent to the city of Westlake Village, where our Las Virgenes Reservoir is, and the brine sent through Westlake Village, Agoura Hills, Thousand Oaks, and then to Ventura County, where we'd eventually meet up with the Cayugas Salinity Management Pipeline. So very much a regional project. The Advanced Water Purification Facility, as I mentioned, is located in Agoura Hills. We've started construction on that site. I'll have a more detailed project update for you in a little bit. But essentially, this is the layout of that facility. Joint Powers Authority purchased a property several years ago in anticipation of this project, and we've been going through an environmental process, which was completed about 3 years ago. Pre-planning, design, and now we are currently in construction at this site. These are some renderings, architectural renderings that we've developed through the design process of that facility. We really worked hard to do a survey of all the surrounding area, the buildings in the surrounding area, to create a facility that was visually pleasing, still was cost efficient, and was a responsible use of ratepayers' funds, but also, was a in keeping with the architectural flavor of that area. The facility is located, the backdrop is Lady Face Mountain, which is a beautiful part of the city of Agoura Hills. And so We took that responsibility of creating a plant that was cost responsible, but also in keeping with that the beautiful natural area that, we're lucky enough to serve water in. And this is a view of the main entrance. And so this is these architectural renderings were developed a little while ago, but it is still the direction that we are heading. So I want to talk a little bit about conveyance and brine disposal. I know, as you heard in the previous presentations, brine disposal is a large challenge for these projects, especially for inland providers such as ourselves. So we have four pipelines that we're building: a source water pipeline to bring the raw water to the facility, a purified line to bring the finished water to the reservoir, and then the concentrate pipeline, which of our 20, 21 miles of pipeline represents 14 miles of that. So that's the major pipeline that we'll be building. It's the green line in the picture that you see there. And then a small residuals pipeline, which will take waste from the advanced water purification facility that can be sent to sewer and then back to Tappian, back into that process and treated again. But the majority of the water that is rejected is sent through the concentrate pipeline to the regional pipeline and then ultimately for ocean disposal. So we have entered on that brine line, we have entered an agreement with Cayagas Municipal Water District for discharge of the brine concentrate. We're currently working with them for design of the discharge station into their regional pipeline. We will be complying with the NPDES permit for the salinity management pipeline that Cayagas has had in place for many years, so meeting all those water quality requirements as part of our discharge. As I said, currently working with Cayagas, who actually designs those discharge stations, but we work closely with them to make sure that we're in coordination with our constructions and specifically also for timeline to make sure that everything is ready to go once the plant is ready to go. Some of our ancillary projects. So in order to support this program and the fact that we're building an advanced water purification facility that can take up to 7.5 million gallons per day, it'll be our largest non-potable customer once it's built. So we need to do upgrades to the overall purple pipe system in order to support that. It actually takes water at the very end of that line as well. So making sure that we have the facilities in place to support our existing non-potable customers is very important. So we're looking at pump station upgrades, equalization storage. We're also looking at projects for augmentation that will, because of the seasonal nature of our facility, we expect to be running at full capacity in winters, but we have a lot of extra capacity in the spring and the summer. So looking at other sources of water regionally, working with local cities for stormwater diversion and other sources of impaired water in order to maximize the capacity or the output of the advanced water purification facility. We're also working closely with the regional board on our reservoir modeling and tracer tests. We've convened an independent advisory panel, which we've had over several years, and working closely with regional board as we verify the adequacy of the reservoir for indirect potable reuse and as an environmental buffer. One of the projects we are pursuing is our spray fields. So we currently do have spray fields as a discharge mechanism, which is used not used very often, but it is one of the levers that we have in order to discharge recycled water from Tapia without going directly to the creek. That being said, with the advanced water purification facility, we may have the opportunity to repurpose those spray fields. So we are currently working with Woodard and Kern, and they're conducting an initial feasibility study, alternative study, to see what options there are for those spray fields. We anticipate a draft of that study later this year or early next year, but this project gives us the opportunity to perhaps use that area for future storage or environmentally beneficial projects. I mentioned augmentation, and some of the sources that we're looking for really are, I think, our best possibility at the moment is stormwater diversion and dry weather flow diversion with our local cities. But because of the seasonal nature and because we have this excess capacity, we really do want to work within the region to find as much water as we can produce and bring back into the water cycle as opposed to just being discharged back into the ocean. So this is a long-term plan, and you know, primarily we want to build the plant and treat the excess water that we have. But as these opportunities develop, we're keeping an eye on those as well and developing these with the cities so that hopefully we can create even more water. This just gives some of the projections. So Based on our historical average, we produce about 2,100 acre feet of year that cannot be beneficial or cannot be sold through the Purple Pipe system. So our base assumption is that we will, at the beginning, produce about 2,100 acre feet per year. The theoretical capacity of the facility at 7.5 MGD in would be about 6,700 acre feet per year. We'll never reach that full theoretical capacity because there's always going to be times where we want to take the plant down for maintenance, change filters to maintain the brine line. But ultimately, we would like to achieve about 5,000 acre feet per year. So a little bit more than double what we already have in excess, we would want to develop through that augmentation program and through local partnerships. Did want to talk quickly about funding and financing. Last time we came to visit, we had been working on a few different funding and financing objectives. So currently, we're under contract for about $10.2 million of BOR Title 16 funding, and have been tentatively awarded another $14 million for a total of about $24.2 million. 10.2 and 14. So we are working closely with Bureau of Reclamation on that additional $14 million. There are some changes to the BABA guidance from the federal government, and so the Buy America, Build America, and so we're navigating that right now in order to secure that $14 million that was awarded last year. In total, as a under $500 million project, we are eligible for up to about $40 million. So we're also going through a new application right now to try and utilize that remaining $15.8 million. However, we do know that the overall program has been reduced from previous years, but we do want to try and get as much money as we can through that program. It's been a very beneficial program for us, and BOR has been great to work with. In the next 2 weeks, we'll be finalizing our WIFIA and state revolving fund loans. So those have been very helpful as well, and we are at the tail end of finalizing those agreements. We also have support from Metropolitan Water District through their local resource program. We're finalizing that agreement this month as well. And we recently, October of last year, just went through a full rate study. Those rates were implemented in January of this year. A rate study that does reflect the cost of this program at $466 million. We've always, from the beginning, wanted to limit the impact to our ratepayers as much as possible. So we're looking at between a 5 and a 6% increase in rates year over year from the new implementation this year until 2030, which is when that new rate structure expires, or when we would introduce a new rate structure. So that translates to about, on average, about $13 per customer per year increase. I think we've done a really good job communicating that to our customers as well. And because of the great work of our funding and financing team, as well as our consultants, have been able to limit that to that 5 or 6%, even with the big price tag of $466 million. So it's been very helpful to be able to translate that to our customers as far as what the real impact on their bill is going to be. As far as schedule, so this is our overall schedule. Our time schedule order for compliance is November 2030. I think since the last time we visited, this has extended a little bit, but we are still looking at complete acceptance testing in April of 2030. So we are still on track to meet that time schedule order. There's been a little bit of time added just through design changes, negotiation with the progressive design builder, and just further project definition. So right now, in December, we accepted the guaranteed maximum price from our progressive design builder of $316 million for construction of the advanced water purification facility and the brine line. The other three pipelines are currently in final design, and we will be negotiating a guaranteed maximum price for that at the end of this year. So those are really our big ticket items under that $466 million. And we, as I mentioned, have started construction on the advanced water purification facility in April, had a groundbreaking, which we had staff members from the regional board attend. Very thankful for you guys' support. We will be starting construction of the brine line within the next month or two. So as I said, current status under construction, we're finalizing 100% design. We are also progressing pump station design, equalization storage design, that spray field study I mentioned, our reservoir monitoring, reservoir modeling. All these are in progress. We're also finalizing those outstanding financial agreements I mentioned, and we continued coordination with the regional board, not only on the upcoming NPDES permit for the facility, but also for the renewal for our Tapia Water Reclamation Facility, making sure that that's all on track so that that renewal can be done prior to operation of Pure Water. Lastly, the challenges we still have in front of us, cost uncertainties. This is, you know, time is always our friend. As the faster we can build these things, the better. As we've all seen over the last several years, cost escalation continues. So, you know, between tariffs, global events, market conditions, we were very lucky to lock in that $316 million price last year. We've already seen prices jump up considerably since that time. So the progressive design build model that was mentioned before and having that price certainty early is a huge benefit for a project. Last time we came, we talked about wetlands and oak tree mitigation. That has largely been resolved. And again, thank you to the regional board for your help with those items. And so we are implementing those mitigation measures and we're able to get all the sign-offs that we needed before we started on site work. Some of the items, we do have long lead times on certain items. A lot of that has calmed down, but, you know, we've worked closely with our progressive design builder for things like electrical equipment, things that may have a year or 2 year of a lead time, being able to get early decisions made on that to time the overall project. The reservoir mixing and detention time permit with DDW and closely coordinated with regional board as well. So that's the driver for that reservoir modeling work. We're also continuing to work with the regional board on CTR compliance for discharge of the purified water into Las Virgenes Reservoir. So thanks to staff for all the coordination with that. But that is one of the items that we still kind of have on our risk register and working through. The budget for the ancillary pipelines, trying to stay in that $466 million, that's going to be one of the main features of my year this year. And then lastly, working through right-of-way encroachment permitting with our local cities, which have been incredibly supportive. You know, we're very lucky to be in the area that we are. City of Thousand Oaks, City of Westlake Village, City of Agoura Hills have been great partners. So we're very, very thankful for their support. With that, hopefully I didn't take up too much time. Thank you so much for having me today, and I'm happy to take any questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Is there anything more from staff at this point before we go into board questions? And all right, so let's start. Would you like to start?
I was wondering, are there any other public comments in regards to this item?
That's a good question. I don't have any cards, but perhaps remote speakers?
There's a few people online, but they don't have their hands up. There's Benjamin Harris, Brian Nguyen. If you can raise your hand if you would like to make a comment.
Okay, well.
Nope, no one's raised their hand.
No? Okay, all right, so let's go on with board questions. Who would like to start? Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, all of you, for your very informative presentations. And, you know, this is an impressive project and obviously important to our city's ability to recycle water and move more towards water independence. So I'm really happy to see all of the cross-collaboration. And on that note, I was wondering, one of you mentioned the science advisory panel, and I'm forgetting whose presentation that was part of. But just curious, you know, what who's on that panel or what types of entities are on that panel?
I can get you a complete listing of the current membership, but we started this in about 2017 when we were developing the designs for the demonstration plant. We wanted to get outside eyes looking at the design concepts that we have. But we have a number of folks from academia. We have some professional consulting type engineers. And then I believe we also had some folks from DDW that sat on the panel also. So I haven't been involved in the last couple of years, but I know they do meet regularly, especially when we reach the culmination of some testing plan or beginning to embark on the next series of tests. So it's an ongoing effort. But if you'd like, I could transmit that to your board, and you can see who's currently on the panel because it has changed over time.
Yeah, that would be great. Okay. And just curious, are there any NGOs on that board, more science kind of oriented NGOs?
I'm not aware that there is, but we have worked closely with the NGOs recently. Martha, I don't know if you want to add to that.
So the panel, in terms of the disciplines, it's kind of in line with what is advised under the groundwater recharge regulations for indirect potable reuse. But I do think, as John says, we do engage with our NGO partners, keep them updated on our efforts related to the project.
Great. Okay, thank you. And then similarly, just wondering for the tours that you held as part of the public outreach, who was invited on those tours? Were those public?
Oh, it's been, they're public tours. Okay. But, you know, on the Metropolitan website, I'm not sure about the sanitation districts. If any of you are interested, there's a very easy way to schedule a tour. You could have the whole board come down, and we'll be happy to set that up. It's very accessible.
Great. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And then lastly, you mentioned grants. And I think you were talking about grants going out to organizations, or were you talking about the grants that would be funding?
Probably incoming grants to the program.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That is it for me. Thank you.
Thank you for this really informative presentation, and I'm hoping that staff could also send us a copy of the PowerPoints as well. That'll be very helpful. But I have a question for Mr. Bernardsky. I'm just wondering, overall, in terms of this Pure Water Southern California project, how is that going to dovetail with the State Water Project and the need to keep the State Water Project reliable?
Well, you know, we believe that, you know, imported water supplies to Southern California are always going to be necessary. They're going to be a foundational source of water. But our dependence on the amounts of imported water can be modulated, hopefully reduced long term. And that's why we see this program as being so important. Just to give you a scale of reference, right now Metropolitan sells about 1.3, 1.4 million acre feet per year. This program, when fully built out, will produce almost 170,000 acre feet per year. So almost 20% of our water sales could be locally sourced, and that would translate directly back to reducing dependence on the Colorado River, reducing dependence on the State Water Project. But we think we're always going to need those two imported supplies.
Okay. And I was wondering, you talked about the Colorado River water. And I'm just wondering, how close are those negotiations in terms of, I mean, is that going to be in our lifetime or in the lifetime of this project?
I'm not the subject matter expert on that, but what I do know is it's been a very challenging experience for the folks at Metropolitan and within California that have been sitting at the negotiating table. You know, our original hope that we'd get a seven state resolution by this year, that no longer seems to be possible. What we're looking for is we do have a proposed offer for the three lower basin states have come together with a proposal to the Bureau of Reclamation. They're taking that under consideration. We had hoped that we would have a long-term agreement being like 20 to 25 years on the operation of the river. We don't think that that's possible at the present time, but we do think that a 1 to 2 year extension will be possible. And that's really kind of the most recent information I have now. We are expecting the Bureau of Reclamation to come out with some direction later this summer as to what that's going to look like in the short term, but it probably won't be any more than about 2 years in duration.
Okay. It is a very challenging, but I really commend you all on this innovative thinking in terms of trying to fund this project and create more reliability. And then another question I had in terms of the maps or the plans that you had laid out, it really shows a lot of interconnectivity of systems. And so with that interconnectivity, are you building in any types of processes, procedures to maintain the systems and keep them protected against things like golden mussel as these systems become more and more interconnected?
We're currently working with both DWR, LA County Public Works, to make sure that any of the imported water supplies that we bring in to Southern California, we're able to protect the existing waterways. We do a lot of groundwater replenishment with the State Water Project supplies, particularly up in the main San Gabriel Basin. So this is a real focal point for our studies right now with DWR and County Public Works is, you know, how to treat the water for golden mussel so that we don't inadvertently contaminate, say, the San Gabriel River, the Los Angeles River. That's a work in progress right now. I know we've got multiple teams at all of these organizations are really putting their heads together to figure out the best way to do that. But basically right now we've suspended our importation of State Water Project supplies for groundwater replenishment right now.
Okay, great. I'm glad you're addressing this issue. And I had a question for Ms. Cortez Davis. And one thing I was wondering, in terms of looking at your system, are you also looking at ways in which resiliency could be designed in for wildfire suppression systems as part of the system?
You know, we're looking at water resiliency at a comprehensive level. So we are going into a new age of our wildfire mitigation plans, for example, which are an energy regulatory requirement. However, we've been able to integrate a lot of the components of what the functions are of the water system to support firefighting and wildfire mitigation specifically. So we are assessing our system in general regarding vulnerabilities and where we can add redundancies with regard to water supply in general, but also to inform some of the questions that have arisen about redundancies in certain parts of the city. So yes, we are taking a long, hard look at these questions. They're very relevant, and what we're hoping is that resilience as a whole will help bolster our ability to recover from any shocks or stressors. That's what we're taking that look at resilience more globally, not only from a supply standpoint, but from an infrastructure standpoint as well. We need to have both really addressed.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad you're looking at that concurrent with these projects. And just one last question for Mr. Schlosser, if I could. And you had talked about repurposing the spray fields. And so I'm wondering, I mean, you said for additional storage, so is there an idea of building, how do you envision that? Is there a groundwater basin under there, or how do you envision that for those spray fields?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. We'd be looking at, the feasibility study right now will look at things like open detention ponds or a buried tank or continued use as a spray field. So really we want to be sure that whatever we do there is one, environmentally beneficial, but also it sets us up to manage the overall system. You mentioned the interconnectedness of these systems. You know, our pure water program will now connect our recycled water, our reclaimed water, our potable water. So making sure that we have the system storage in order to maximize the use of the water that we're collecting and also to store the water that we're creating is really important. So we're really taking a wide look at what we could use that for, but those are some of the options that we're thinking about.
Yeah, and I was wondering as a sort of a side question to that in terms of partnerships, are you envisioning at some point to involve Camarosa Water District as one of a potential partner for the future? Because I know they have a water reuse facility as well.
Yeah, I mean, Camarosa is certainly one of our neighbors. We talk to them a lot. We don't have a direct connection to them necessarily. One of the conversations that happened early on in the project, we were closely with the city of Thousand Oaks, and they Camarosa and Thousand Oaks both, I'm going to forget the name of the arroyo, but the where Thousand Oaks discharges their treated water to is also connected to Camarosa. And so when we talk about brine or we talk about taking maybe impaired water from Thousand Oaks and augmenting our facilities with it, all of those involve all the regional agencies, including Camarosa. So, yeah, it's definitely – and through Cayegas as well and the salinity management pipeline. So we're in contact with them, but I wouldn't say there's like a direct connection to our project in Camarosa at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you. And also thank you for so far keeping on track on the November 2030 deadline. And let us know if you deviate as soon as possible.
It's my number one job, yeah.
Coming in early is good, too.
I'm trying, yeah. Thank okay. you.
Thank you.
Reed, I'd like to thank all the representatives from the various local government agencies and applaud your work for the last decade or so. Quite impressive to continue this work and the momentum. And also happy to hear about the wildfire mitigation plan. It's very timely, as we heard, and look forward to getting more updates about that. I only had a general comment. I was also excited about this component besides looking at water resiliency and water recycling, of course, which are the main objectives, but the workforce development side, and particularly working with students and other individuals to get them involved. I remember recently seeing that the water science and water engineering is one of the top employment growth sectors in our country and one of the top paying jobs for recent college graduates. So while I'm very happy about the high school, really hopefully that you can expand that a little bit more towards some of the local colleges and universities in the area. But thank you for your work.
Okay, no questions, but I just wanted to thank everyone. I want to thank Adam and the team within our water board, and then want to just thank the everybody who came today. It's been really exciting to see. I think I've been able to attend all of the various openings and groundbreakings and the tours, and it's just really incredible to see the work that's being done, the innovation, the partnerships, the regional approaches. I think that it is something for decades to come that is going to just really make such an improvement to our society. So I want to thank all of your work. I know it's countless hours that you are doing, and the passion that you show for these projects is also really heartening to see. So thank you so much. And any way that we can be of assistance and help and continued help, I know that we've been in partnership and collaboration a lot, but anything that we can continue to do, please come back to our board. Thank you.
Thank you. So I have a question for Ms. Tremblay and Mr. Bednarski, and then a question for the LADWP team. So, and by the way, let me also thank you all so much for coming and presenting to us. It's really, really welcome, and the work that's being done, truly laudable. It's so appreciated, and this board is very supportive of recycled projects, and I know we have regulations that have to be complied with. But at the end of the day, those regulations will also put the imprimatur of safety when you have to communicate with the public about the water that you know that you're going to be serving. So the question, first of all, for I guess it's more for Mr. Bednarski is, you know, I think everybody says, you know, that there's going to be a cost to this, but the idea is somehow to try to minimize the cost to the ratepayer. And you said that at some point additional funding resources beyond rates, grants, right? So has there been any kind of analysis been done yet about what additional funding would be? Because it seems to me additional funding is then P3s and perhaps performance-based contracting of some, but it means bringing the private sector into the equation. Am I right, or are there other things beyond rates and grants and you know governmental loans?
Well, I think this is an important subject that we're planning to embark on over the next couple of years. Okay. We do have kind of this rate-based funding, rate/grant-based funding for the next 2 to 3 years, the $150 million that we'll be utilizing for our portion of the program. And then using that time to really develop that financial plan that you've referred to, Chair Nahai, is to how can we generate the funding to support an $8 to $9 billion program at full build-out. And, you know, some of the things that we want to start talking about could be potentially things like general obligation bonds, maybe a five-county initiative that would fund major capital water infrastructure to support Southern California, because we're not – Metropolitan's not only looking at this major investment, but also a potential investment in Sites Reservoir, Delta Conveyance Project, and then a host of other ones, including additional storage south of the Delta. We have just a whole raft of infrastructure projects that we think are really critical to ensuring the reliability and resiliency of this region. So we want to put all of that together in discussions over the next 2 to 3 years and really come back with a well-thought-out plan of how to move forward. At the present time, I don't see P3s being part of that discussion, but I don't want to rule that out entirely, because I think we would just want don't want to take anything off the table at this early stage in that discussion. So I would just leave that open maybe for future updates to this board as to the progress that we're making in those areas.
Yeah. I think, you know, the people of Southern California, you know, Measure W is an example.
Yes.
You know, when it comes to water, they are willing to foot the cost. But I think as this conversation goes forward, you know, part of it is going to have to be, well, you know, what possible avenues of funding did you exhaust before coming back to the ratepayer?
Correct. You know? We totally agree.
Yes. So, yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks so much. So, and one question for you, perhaps, Mr. Tanimoto, because you mentioned it, so I'll pose the question to you. So regarding Pure Water LA, I mean, I think it's most people have, at least what is I think in the discussion is, you know, you do MBR at Hyperion, you sell some to West Basin, you store some at Central Basin, you then build the pipeline up through the city, 50 miles to the filtration plant, and perhaps you might have like turnouts along the way, depending on how that would look, and so on. But you mentioned that there is a feasibility study that's going to be done. So what is the status of that? What's the timing of it? And is the feasibility study going to actually study whether Pure Water LA as a whole is something that should be pursued, or how do you see that feasibility study developing?
Yeah, it's a great question, Chair. Thank you. So the way that we see that, and it's something that is just starting now, and I'll share maybe a little bit of the origin might help as well. After we released the master plan, this was around the end of 2024, early 2025, the feedback that we got was, okay, this is all well and good. Like, you have a sense of where the water could go. You have a sense of how much water could be treated, but does it really make sense to do that? And what's behind that question is, what do your overall supplies look like, and where does this program fit into it? As others have talked about, you know, the imported water needs are still there. The diversity of the supplies is what we're after. Mm-hmm. If we're building a local water supply, you know, others have kind of looked at us and said, well, doesn't that mean you're going to buy less imported water? Doesn't mean you're going to take less from the aqueduct. And our answer to that is, no, we still need to have that diversity. If something happens to one of those supplies, if something happens to any of our supplies, that is really what is important in the resilience aspect of it. So when we look at the feasibility study, what is really feasible could be interpreted in a lot of different ways. There's the engineering perspective of what could be built, right? Which in a lot of respects, a lot of things could be built. The question is, how much are you willing to pay for it? What are the actual benefits for the supplies that you're getting from it? And in what scenarios are you getting that benefit, right? If we build the full 200 plus million gallon per day capacity, we might only run that capacity 2 years out of 10 or 3 years out of 10. If we build something a little bit smaller, like 150 MGD, we might use that 8 out of 10 years or something. So the feasibility study, it's partly to analyze the physical, tangible components of it, but it's really trying to answer that question of what is feasible from affordability perspective, what's feasible for people to be able to pay for, and through what means and methods could you do that? It's quite a lot of things wrapped up into it, so it's a pretty complex analysis. I will say that we've targeted early 2027 for that delivery date. We have a lot of internal analysis that's already been done since the master plan was done in the past 2 years that would support the feasibility study being delivered in a timely fashion. But in order to answer those really fundamental questions about how the department views supply reliability going forward and how we value IPR and how much we value DPR, those are really the questions that we're going to be taking the time to look into.
Yeah, and I think in talking to ratepayers, you know, the phasing of a project also becomes very important because it's one thing to go to the ratepayers and say, you know, guess what, we've got a $26 billion project here, which may not be welcome news to people. But whereas if it's this much during this time, it can be more palatable. But I think the feasibility study that you're talking about is actually a much more fundamental, almost basic examination of the project altogether.
That's correct, right? So because the conceptual documents outlined a particular phasing that was already in there that said, okay, if you want to build 200 million gallons a day of capacity, you could do it in three phases, but you won't get the first phase until, let's say, 2040. Now, will people look at that and say that's a feasible program if you don't see a drop of water for 15 years and it costs you $9 or $10 billion to just build that first phase? That was really the strong initial feedback that we got, and it's been a very interesting experience. You know, from an engineering perspective, it's like we think certain things make sense and we have a certain plan. But only once we opened the door to the NGOs and others that said, hey, does that really make a lot of sense? Like, why don't you distribute that capacity elsewhere? You know, utilize your existing facilities more, keep the wastewater in the valley. Like, there are all these other concepts that started coming out of it. And when I'm looking at it now from an engineering perspective, the feasibility study that's going to look at that broader suite of alternatives, it's a lot more robust that way. So, you know, I'm always thinking that proverb, you know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together, right? So we're trying to go far with this. It's a multi-billion dollar program. It's going to take many years. But the only way to do that is to have a very collaborative experience and collaborative, you know, input from everyone at the table that has, you know, opinions and strong ones at that.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you. Not seeing any other questions. All right, so thank you all so much, really, for coming and presenting. And Mr. Slaughter, I didn't have any questions for you because your presentation was just so clear and comprehensive that, all right, thanks very much. Okay, we can move on to item number 11, but we can take a five-minute break if anybody would like. Yes, some would like. Okay, so it is now... But it's now 11:40. Can we come back at 11:50? 10 minutes? 10 minutes? Okay. All right, let's come to order, please. Okay, we're going to go on to item number 11. If everyone would like to sit down. All right, so this is item number 11, is consideration of tentative resolution approving the City of Los Angeles' proposed 2026-2028 special study for the Hyperion Water Reclamation Plant and Terminal Island Water Reclamation Plant. This is MPDS item number, CA 0109991 and CA 0053856, and I'm going to administer the oath. So please, could everybody who's going to be testifying on item number 11 please stand and take the following oath? Yeah, everyone who's going to be speaking on this item. Okay, thank you. So, do you promise that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? Please respond, I do, or say yes. Okay, thank you. All right, so there's no staff presentation on this matter, so I'll call up the city representative to the podium, and this is Dr. Otim, Senior Chemist and Environmental Monitoring Division, LA Sanitation and Environment, for 20 minutes. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Good morning or good afternoon, Chair, members of the board. Thank you for the opportunity to present our proposal today. My name is Ochan Otim. By the way, Ochan, not Okan. And I'm here to introduce our proposed microplastic baseline work plan for the Hyperion and Terminal Island Water Reclamation Plant spanning 2026 July to 2028 June. The work plan, as you're going to see, represents a proactive and a scientifically rigorous effort to establish a definitive microplastic baseline at these two facilities. I'll give you a brief background information that might be necessary to understand what I will be saying next. And then I'll follow up with the objective and the framework within which we plan to complete this work. And then I'll finish up by laying down what kind of methods we're going to use to collect the data we need and give you a brief summary of how we're going to treat the data to extract the information that we need. For those who are not familiar, microplastic, by California standard, is polymeric solids of human origin, and that's important, to which chemical additives or other substances may have been added. They are particulates of sizes that range between 1 nanometer to 5 millimeters. However, they are not naturally derived polymers to which no chemical modifications have been made. So I thought I'd put that out of the way. Now, there are two major sources of, recognized sources of microplastic. What have I done here? There are two major sources. Now, this kind of categorization is mainly for descriptive purposes only. You could come up with your own means and probably will be acceptable. The first, by California standard, is the primary source. What that means is the people who produce the microplastics themselves. I have a problem with wastewater being included in this category, the wastewater treatment plant, because I know Hyperion and Terminal Island do not produce plastics. The secondary source is what happens to those plastics once they get into the system. In other words, some kind of chemical modification or physical agitation has to occur to break them to further tiny particles. And this is now well recognized as occurring within the wastewater treatment system. That's why we chose to pursue microplastics here. What would be the impact of this? Why microplastic? The reason we are interested is because they are so prevalent of these days. If you watch 60 Minutes about 2 weeks ago, this program 60 Minutes, they found microplastics in the lowest part of the ocean in marine animals, which nobody knew even lived. They found microplastics in them. That's how pervasive they've become. They are causing toxicological and chemical harm to aquatic system. And surprise, surprise, they are hurting human beings too. And this has been documented adequately. So you may ask, why are we jumping ahead with this right now in California? Why would we pursue microplastic at this point? The reason is because over the last few years, Well, I'm going to speak from my notes. Over the last few years, what we have witnessed is that the board, the California State Board, along with the Ocean Protection Council, have steadily escalated mandates for microplastic monitoring, particularly in drinking water and coastal ecosystem. And we know from experience that when such mandates start showing up, ours is on the way as well. So publicly owned treatment works, especially those like Hyperion and Terminal Island, are now recognized scientifically as critical nodes in transporting microplastics from sources upstream to the general aquatic environment. So while there are currently no numeric NPDES permit limits for microplastic, we know that data-driven rulemaking is on the horizon. So rather than reacting to them when they finally come, we have chosen to ensure that we generate high-quality data needed to inform those future policies. And that's why we picked to do this at this time. Now, just for the record, other speakers this morning already talked about this, but I just want to show you, those who are interested, a brief discussion why Hyperion and Terminal Island are really good for this project. First, Hyperion is the biggest, if not one of the biggest, wastewater treatment plant there west of Mississippi, and it serves mostly municipal waste, municipal establishment, whereas Terminal Island has two major advantages for this kind of work. Number one, it has been a pioneer in water recycling, reuse, and it serves mostly the industrial establishment along the Los Angeles Harbor. So collectively, we believe we might be able to understand a lot more about microplastic when we look at both wastewater sources in unison. So above all, we believe that by studying these plants, the insight we gain won't just benefit the city of Los Angeles. They will provide scalable data for other utilities across the entire state. The work plan we have in mind looks something like this. We plan to start next month consulting with all relevant sources of information. Since we don't have the capacity to do this work in-house, we plan to engage all kinds of people we know and entities we know who can help in this. And, of course, some training is going to be the component of what we're working with, because it's a new field, really, where we're getting into. So we hope to finish all this by December 2026. And that, of course, includes doing some serious literature research in peer-reviewed journals to see what others are doing. The real work starts in January 2027. That's when we start collecting samples. We hope that to get the first set of samples in between January and April there, and then the second set of samples in June 2027. Now, once that is done, we are going to do a dry run to see what this data is saying. What is the data telling us about microplastic in these two plants? And then we will go in October to match and try to reproduce this data by collecting additional samples. By doing this, we are doing two things at the same time. We are trying to see if reproducibility is there. Are people behaving the same way upstream of this wastewater treatment plant? Or are there seasonality associated with what is going on here? So we'll do that. And then in the eighth quarter, April 2028 to June, we will combine all the data and our analysis of the data into one giant report for the board to look at. Now, what we have chosen, the method we have chosen to use was actually developed by the State Water Board in collaboration with the Squab Southern California Coastal Water Research Project. And I guess that's the official designation, SWBE MP2 Revision 1, which is a Raman spectrometry-based method. There are two methods that the state developed. We chose to use this one here. I just put this picture to highlight what it might look like. Now, what this method does is it allows us to qualify what is there. In other words, we can look at what kind of plastics is present, and then we'll go ahead and quantify how much of it is there. And then we, based on equation that I'll show you very briefly over here, that's the kind of data we're going to be collecting. We are targeting 10 varieties of microplastics, and we plan to look at differences along the treatment train from when the water comes in and follow it upstream and see where things are happening. Now, the benefit of this kind of analysis is that you can predict what's happening upstream based on what you get, especially Hyperion with 5 influent pipelines. You can actually compartmentalize and understand where this is coming from. So that is a good thing. The other thing we can figure out is talk about secondary sources of microplastic. As we move from the influent all the way to outflent, we can figure out exactly what's happening. And based on what we find out, we may propose some general solutions for everybody. What you see here is just a generic and overly simplified equation we're going to use to look into the data we collect, where we just do a simple math subtraction, what you saw on this side from what you see on the other side, divided by what you saw previously times 100. That should give you a percentage efficiency. Now, based on our experience in this kind of work here with environmental sample, you are bound to find even negative values. So we have to be prepared to explain what a negative really means. Where did the excess, where did it disappear? Did it just kick the wall of the treatment system or what? So there's a lot of story that we're going to see out of this. Now, the second line there, I'm just showing you where we are going to be collecting sample. Since the focus is primarily on advanced wastewater treatment, we are going to be focusing around that area as well to collect sample from both sides and see if we can see any differences. How much is each of these plants really helping out in reducing the amount of microplastic? The other component that normally is not treated fairly in academic research is the impact of weather on samples. We see this on the side over and over again, that weather, when we consider it rain in California, there are certain contaminants which show up more frequently than others. The reverse is also true. There are certain contaminants that just disappear during the wet season. They show up during the dry season. And we are beginning to understand that why, the reason. And it turns out those discrepancies come because of the source upstream. When the source is domestic, this is based on other contaminants. When the source is domestic, you normally tend to see a lot more contaminants during the wet weather in the influent. When the source is industrial, like TI, we have evidence that more contamination actually shows up during the summer. So you begin to answer, is it general for microplastics as well? And that's why we think factoring weather into this study is kind of important too. And of course, what we're going to be, the data we're going to be generating will be beneficial to Santa Monica Bay and the LA Harbor area. It will help us understand what is going on. And the last line there is normally what the board insists on having converted to daily loadings. How much grams did you get per day? How much pound did you get per day? How much pound did you disperse outside there? So we'll do the honor and do that conversion as well. So that, with that, I end my talk here. And thank you for your attention. I'm ready for any questions.
Thank you very much. Yes. Is there any comments from staff to add to the presentation from Dr. Rotim? Okay. So let's see, are there questions on board members? Board member Mendez.
Thank you. I'm excited about this study, and I see from the background material it comes from legislation at the state, and for the first phase, 30 public agencies are going to submit some of these type of baseline assessment reports. Is there anyone else in our region that's also doing a similar report, or just LA were selected?
No. But we are doing, we are funding other microplastic studies in the region, not through SCORP and other agencies like that, but none for municipal wastewater
okay,
plants.
Okay, great. Thank you.
No questions, but I look forward to seeing the results of this. So thank you so much for your work.
Yes, thank you for the presentation. But I was just wondering, in terms of this study, would the data be useful for us to identify some source reduction techniques or to be able to open up dialogue with certain industries that are the source of some of these microplastics?
Certainly. That's really what we're driving at. If we could collect enough data and identify what kind of material is coming from where, and based on the fact that we know which companies are upstream of each pipeline, we should be able to narrow down the candidates and propose solutions.
And I'm wondering if it could lead to some kind of a product responsibility. I mean, it shouldn't be incumbent upon just the wastewater entities to shoulder the cost of removing this contaminant from our water sources. There should be some shared burden of that. Like you said at the very beginning of your presentation, you're not aware of wastewater entities providing a lot of microplastics into the system. They're more of a delivery mechanism. So.
Yeah, I agree totally with that, and that's where the emphasis should really be. There's a misnomer out there where wastewater treatment plants are blamed for everything. They are the source of PFAS, they are the source of microplastic, they are the source of that, and yet none, to my knowledge, produce plastics, PFAS, or any of those things. It's coming from somewhere. We just convey it through if we cannot take anything out of them. So that's a legitimate.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, misinterpret that by saying that wastewater treatment systems should be off the hook for that. I'm just saying that funding, I mean, you have a responsibility to remove those waste.
Yeah.
But funding should be a shared responsibility.
Okay, understood.
I had a quick question to ask you as well. So my question was on duration.
Yeah.
So it said the special study will begin in July of 2026. So begin next month. That's going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
On track. And then it's slated to be completed July of 2028. But then there was a comment here about that there could be challenges, sampling procedures, unpredictable weather conditions, and so on. Have you taken that into account in predicting a July 2028 completion date, or do you think that date's going to slip?
This was based on our past experience with these kind of studies where things just happen and we can't finish. So we thought we put that statement there as a placeholder. But our target is to finish it in June. So that was not part of the timeline we have given. It's just a placeholder in case we need it.
Okay.
Am I right on that?
Yeah.
I can see lots of nodding heads, so I guess you answered that one correctly.
Okay.
All right, thank you. I don't have any other questions. Thanks so much for coming and making the presentation here. We so appreciate it very much. And nothing from staff? Would you have something to add? I know that.
Oh, okay.
I'm thanking.
Oh, thank you, sorry.
I understand that there is a motion. Okay. And we have now to take a vote. So Vice Chair Ashton obviously moves approval.
I move approval. I was ready.
I think Vice Chair Ashton also seconds and votes. So, all right.
I move.
Board Member Camacho seconds. Could we have a roll call, please?
Vice Chair Ashton.
Yes, thank you.
Board Member Camacho.
Yes.
Board Member Christensen.
Yes.
Board Member Mendez.
Yes.
Chair Nahai.
Whatever Vice Chair Ashton said.
Motion carries.
Thanks. All right. That concludes that item. Now we can move to our closed session. And Council, would you like to prepare us for that?
So in closed session, we're going to discuss Agenda Item 12D, Chiquita Canyon LLC versus County of Los Angeles, Los Angeles Regional Water Control Board et al. Agenda Item 12H, People of the State of California, XREL, California Water Quality Control Board, Los Angeles Region versus Prologis, Inc. et al. Agenda Item 12L2, a matter which, based on existing facts and circumstances, the Los Angeles Water Board is deciding whether to initiate litigation. And Agenda Item 12L Subdivision III. And actually, the last one was 12L Subdivision 2. So sorry for that. Consideration. So the last one is consideration of the appointment of an employment evaluation performance about a public employee.
Great, thank you. And we will not be coming back to this room.
Correct.
Okay. And so our next meeting will be on July 23rd, 2026, in the city of Long Beach at the Long Beach Council Chambers, located at 411 West Ocean Boulevard in Long Beach. Okay.
Perfect.
We shall adjourn.